los, ¿no? Dicen, os quieren de misa o exalga, ¿no? O menos están en San José Félix. O misa es el agente, ¿no? Es el agente, ok, ok, ok. Alright, oh, you're welcome. Fortunately, you have been with us. We really appreciate what you come earlier so that you have ample time to relax and prepare yourself. I'm going to give the opportunity to you to present the opinions. She's accompanied by Ms. Alison Tangana. Thank you so much. Over to you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thank you very much. I think from the onset, as Falga, we must... Now our things are not moving. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Madam Buzza. I also want to apologize for the fact that the documents as presented and already given to Honorable Member, we have made some slight changes on the original document, and if possible, we would want to reduce them and maybe read to other copies where we have made some changes. Thank you very much. But Honorable Chairperson, we need to first and foremost to indicate the fact that as SALGA, we derive our mandate from Section 163 of the 1996 Constitution of the Republic of South Africa as a voice and the sole representative of local government. This is the premise in which we want to actually present this input. And of note, we must indicate the fact that our submission, Honorable Chair, should not actually be construed as substituting any other input that may have been submitted directly by individual municipalities. That's what we want us to agree on. And over and above that, we want to say as well that we will welcome this piece of legislation because we've got a reason to believe that it protects the informal section and most importantly our backyard tenants, and there are many abuses, and we agree with most of the presenters who presented earlier that there is a lot of abuses in the backyard, especially in the backyard sector. We realize that we are coming up with another NLS vulgar that needs to be looked into, and we are also saying that this protection of the very backyarders, it's long overdue, and it's most welcome. And because I think to a certain extent it also indicates the fact that we are a caring government. And as SALGA, we want to be part of the solution in implementing this legislation and ensuring that it protects the very big area as intended. And we are also saying that municipalities will work in cooperation with national to make sure that this is implementable. Now, Chair, municipalities at some point expressed concern about the requirements to set up your rental housing information office because of the cost implication, especially for local government. And we understand the fact that it also talks of the fact that provincial departments will incur costs associated with the implementation of this act. more especially or including public issues of the bill for public comments, information sessions, and translations. But if you look into section 2 of the bill itself, it talks about the fact that the national department would be responsible, obviously, for developing and funding programs to train municipal officials who will be appointed or designated to carry such duties in relation to your rental housing tribunal information office. We understand that provincial departments are necessarily supposed to assist local municipalities who have not been accredited with level 3 or assigned the housing function in establishing the RHTIO, your rental housing. It's too much, it's too long of the name, your rental housing tribunal information office. So we have municipalities that are not yet accredited. And in this instance, we are saying that only those 6 metros who are set to be assigned this function by 2015 at the latest must cover the very cost, those costs for themselves, because obviously I think the budget will allow them to be able to put such. And we are also putting up a case here that says low capacity municipalities who are unable to employ any new person or designate a full-time post to this office can combine the functions of the very office with the existing office. And I'm sure if you remember at some point we used to have teams, and I was reminded by the honorable member who was sitting there that we used to have teams, people in planning section who were necessarily seconded from national to municipalities for a particular period. We can actually copy the best practice or model to have such people seconded at the cost of national to come and actually transfer skill to the local municipalities, whereby I'm sure we can share that and get the experience at some point. And it is therefore South of you, Honorable Chair, that the amendment bill adequately addresses the issue of the cost to municipalities in relation to establishing of this very office that we are talking about. Now, in terms of eviction-related cases, Honorable Chair, we as well, we feel that the tribunal itself must refer the matter to a competent court within 30 days of receipt of the complaint, and this is also included in your section 11 in the bill itself. And we are saying that the tribunal will then no longer hear any eviction-related cases. And potential confusion related to the cases of unfair practices and evictions. And in this case, we are saying that such cases of related to unfair practices must be heard by the tribunal unless proceedings have already been instituted in any other court. And this tribunal must refer eviction-related cases to a competent court. That's what we are actually saying, so that it eases also their work or offloads their work. But the question that we think the department itself and the bill itself needs to clarify as organized local government is such that this unfair practices, does this bill include unfair practices? Not include evictions, and to what extent has it covered the issue of evictions? It needs to be clarified. It doesn't come out clearly, and we think that such small aspects must be looked into, and the cost implementation of legislation fall on mainly on provincial departments. We understand that, and in many cases we think that the budget of this rental housing tribunal already overstretched in terms of the provincial department itself, but it's not us to mitigate on their behalf, but we are just making a point that this course will include obviously training municipal employees assigned to this RHTIO, publication of the bill for public comment, informal information sessions, information sharing sessions, translations, and other related courses, Honorable Chair. And we are, as Saga Chair, understanding the fact that this bill talks of the minister, not necessarily the MEC, because if you remember that previously it was referring to the MEC. It says the minister may make regulations related to the Act. Now, Yeah, the principle at section 15, subsection 1F says that regulations may relate to unfair practices, which include, among others, but not necessarily limited to deposits, evictions, house rules, tenant committees, overcrowding and health matters, maintenance, reconstruction or refurbishment, municipal services. Now, the amendment bill now empowers the minister to also issue regulations which relate to norms and standards that are aligned to the policy framework set out in section 2 of section 3 and in relation to the terms of and conditions of the lease, safety, health and hygiene, basic living conditions including access to basic amenities, the sizes obviously of the space, overcrowding and affordability, and provided that such norms and standards may be set per geographical area to avoid unfair practices, particularly to that particular area. Now, it also says that the minister can also issue regulations, that's what the bill says, relating to calculations, methods of escalation of rental amounts and maximum rate of deposit by tenants. We are also overemphasizing the first point that issue of consultation is actually the key in this instance, whereby your intergovernmental structures should be working in such a way that the minister will see maybe through the min max and subsequently, because you don't necessarily go, it does not go deeper into talking to the fact that the minister must consult with municipalities. It doesn't go to that extent. But we are saying here municipalities fall under a category of landlords in cases of municipally owned rental stock and presumably all social housing institutions. Now, in this instance, Honorable Chair, we are saying geographic areas cross is very problematic. And we want to understand that does this subsection give a national minister powers to set different norms and standards for rental housing for any and all geographical areas in the country, size of such geographical areas, which is not necessarily specified. And could this theoretically result in different safety standards between municipalities or provinces or within a municipality? These are the clarity that we are seeking as a SALGA, that issues of equity concerns across provinces and cities, and also problematic because a municipality is well suited to make individualized norms and standards appropriate to communities in its jurisdiction than national minister. That's the point we're trying to make here. And further, Honorable Chair, we noted that the amendment bill does not require the minister specifically to consult with municipalities. This is the point that I've made earlier before issuing these regulations. And important that there are the issue of uniform standards across the country to protect informal tenants and ensure that there are no abuse of backyard dwellers, which we call SALGA backyarders. And I must also indicate the fact that SALGA, we have actually consulted throughout all the provinces and with all our municipalities on this very matter. Actually, my far ahead of the minister and the department in terms of this policy, Honorable Chair, I must indicate that fact. And however, we also need to avoid other issues whereby one situation in one municipality is different in another municipality, Chair. What is important that is the fact that municipalities and national should work together on regulations to manage the informal sector. We need each other here, actually. I think it can't be that we work, it's like in the olden days whereby we worked from top to bottom. We have to, in a way, to find ourselves and make sure that at some point we have common ground and common understanding of what is it that we are to achieve. We don't want to reinvent the wheel. We want to be part of the process moving forward and spread also to make it easier for both national for this to be implementable and to be enforced. Honorable Chair, the Minister only has 12 months after the commencement of the Rental Housing Amendment to issue such regulations. And we are saying that this is a short time frame and it's very problematic because, amongst others, the scope of the potential regulation is very wide, ranging from safety standards to rent limits, which limits
and the likelihood of ascending, reaching and developing and gaining consensus on such technical and controversial issues within 1 year. It's very challenging. I don't want to be controversial to say it's unlikely, but we seem to be under pressure most of the time to come to such regulations, and in terms of time frames, we put very limited time frame, and sometimes it's not realistic, sometimes it's not even achievable. Sometimes we didn't go and implement it despite the fact that consultations has not necessarily gone or taken place. And we are saying it's very challenging, and I'm sure we'll find a way to agree at some point. And we're saying also, Honorable Chair, that all municipalities should be consulted on these regulations, which stipulate fire safety standards for backyards in their jurisdiction, for example. And given the dynamic nature of the rental market, especially the informal market, such regulations should not be a once-off exercise. Provisions should be made for the regulations to be updated from time to time. But we are also emphasizing the point, Honourable Members, that SAGA is ready to work closely with the Department on the development of those regulations and closely with the Minister. Obviously, with the Minister through the Department itself to work together. We need each other and work together in this policy, and we really want to indicate our support as SAGA over and above the fact that in the Principal Act, the definitions of dwellings include a hostel, room, shack, a shack, a room or an outbuilding, and therefore the act will theoretically apply to backyards in both formal and informal buildings. And because there are no specific mention, Honorable Chair, of backyard dwellings or explicit inclusion of this subsection, we are saying as ALGA that the amendment bill introduces requirements that all tenants have written leases enforceable in the tribunal or competent court. Now, the minister, we are saying that because of the fact that the bill says that the minister must develop a pro forma lease in all the languages, which includes all those necessary things like the defects and stuff like that, how feasible will that be that it should be done by the minister? It's our question, really. Unless we're saying that the minister must come up with something, yes, that we will work on, because the situation differs from area to area. Down there, we will have to work on, if you have to understand how the situation really works in terms of our backyards, to say at least. It's a very complicated matter. It becomes very complicated if you go deeper into it. But I'm saying applications of this requirement to backyard rental will have far-reaching implications, and most because of the fact that most backyard tenants have informal arrangements and mostly and often are non-monitored. So unless otherwise, they are not necessarily included in what we are talking about. But we think in the back of our mind, because we are an organized local government the body that represents the municipalities, we understand the situation better than they on the ground. That's our understanding. And we are further saying that the backyard dwellings are one of the largest housing subsectors in South Africa, and they make a significant contribution to the provision of rental housing to households whose needs are not necessarily addressed by government subsidy programs. And largely without any government intervention or support, the sector successfully provides accommodation to non-qualified migrants or temporary workers, not even seeking home ownership, and any other household wishing to rent, but who cannot necessarily afford formal rental accommodation which is available. And I'm sure we are making a point also by reflecting the statistics of 2011, which indicate the fact that 25% of all South Africans rent. And of all the household, 1.14 million, which constitutes 10.8%, are in backyard rooms, as we are speaking now. It's a very large component or section of our community that we are talking about. And we are also saying that 42% of all the backyard structures are formally constructed as second dwellings and formally constructed rooms. And 57% are informally constructed, which we call shacks, Chinkuku. This is what we are trying to present, Honorable Chair. That SAGA's, we did a research on backyarders in 2012, and we have developed a document which set out the approach, the appropriate the measure that local government should respond to. And we have consulted, as I earlier mentioned, with all our municipalities in 2013, and the document will be finalized and presented to the Human Settlement MINMEC in March 2014, because we are presenting the document tomorrow in our NEC meeting of SALGA for NEC to adopt the document before we even submit it to MINMEC. That's how serious we are, actually, in terms of what we are talking about. And in the absence, Honorable Chair, of the National Police Framework on Vehicles, this document will serve as an important policy and project guideline for local government, and we are saying to pursue the enforcement of the Rental Housing Act as amended to the better. The sector could have far-reaching implications, and we are saying the government intervention in the form of ministerial regulation setting out strict norms and standards applicable to informal dwellings in backyards could have the unintended negative effects of undermining landlord incentives to rent out backyard space and thus reduce an important supply of affordable private rentals in urban areas, Honorable Chair. We are further saying, Honorable Chair, that the principal act is not necessarily explicit in some ways. If the intention is to cover informal backyard rental, amendment bill must make this explicit. It must be clear. It must be understandable to everybody. And to cater to unique aspects of informal rental. And significantly, we are saying more thought and explicit attention needs to be given to how to address backyard sector constructively to avoid unintended negative consequences of national regulations. And for example, honorable members, we are saying that enforcing retirement for formal written leases will seriously distort and alter the backyard rental market, which capitalizes on the flexibility of lease agreement arrangements. And will there be separate norms and standards for backyard rentals in the minister's regulations? Will the definition of unfair practices be different for formal and informal rental? And enforcement of norms and standards for backyard rental will be costly and require significant resources. The responsibility of the municipality, what are those? Have you been able to clearly spell out the responsibility of the municipality, local municipality in this regard? And to expect municipality to take on this burden without at a minimum going through an extensive consultation process with affected municipalities might be very unrealistic. But we agree that there should be a thorough consultation, and we are prepared to be part of such as a father, together with the department and the minister, to be part of this whole thing. And we must say that aspects of this amendment bill have potential to massively alter informal backyard sector if enforced, and specifically the requirements for written list and authority of the minister to make geographic specific regulations related to detailed aspects of rental conditions. We are saying, Honorable Chair, that backyard tenants have right to protection of their right to basic services and adequate housing. However, scope of regulating regulations which the minister can make might be over-regulated or over-regulation of the rental market, which runs the risk of negatively impacting on the market and reducing supply of affordable or informal rental. And furthermore, Honorable Chair, that the scope of regulations which covers areas which fall under municipal authority should not rest by the municipal by the municipalities in their own bylaws. Obviously, whatever the regulation that the minister will come up with, we have to be incorporated within our bylaws, because if they are not in the bylaws of the municipality, they can't be enforced. There will be the minister there, and it will be us, because we must make sure that we incorporate them within our bylaws so that they can be enforced. And I think it will be important to ensure that provincial departments and municipalities also have adequate capacity to enforce those regulations, and with increased case loads, which might be related to the informal sector itself. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Councillor.
Thanks very much, Chair. Thank you, Councillor Mulloy, and Sangha as well. Though you have put a disclaimer to say this does not represent the official position of the organized local government, how should we treat it as such? Let's clarify that disclaimer.
You are now the chair.
Okay. I think we should take note that you have said that the issue of cost is not an issue, because at the last end of that slide you're saying that you prefer for Salgar's view that there isn't adequately address the issue of the cost in municipalities of establishing the rental housing terminal information. So there's not an issue much, because of much of this implementation will rest with the local government, correctly as you're saying. In terms of IHR, I think we've got to make a provision for us to work together there. I just want to latch on one thing in terms of nonsense standards. I think nothing is taking away Salga's role in making sure that the local government proclaim their bylaws. So I think it's a given in terms of the constitution and IGR, there's no way that national government can take over the role of local government in terms of bylaws. You do your bylaws in as far as that is concerned. The question I have to you is that this nonsense standards that the ministers do, how does it marry with your bylaws and most particularly the issue of the backyarders? I think you are bringing the issue of the backyarders here because clearly most of the municipalities are battling with the backyards. And I think we as national government, we are not coming to give you a solution on your backyarders problem, because it's your problem. You created it because of you failed to address it adequately with your IDP. Then you want to come here and cry foul and say, no, you are making provision for us. The backyarders is your problem, you deal with it with your panels. That's the bottom line. The nonsense standard that we are doing here, because it's the same question that we were trying to address earlier on when the Banking Association were telling us we must do separate bills for the poor and the vulnerable and as well as the competitive market. We can't do that. So consequently, with this one, we can't do that. We have to give you a standard because unfortunately we operate on a national level. So we are not narrow focused. I know municipalities have got a tendency of don't touch me, my studio. You want to confine yourself to your little geographic area. But we are looking at the bigger picture. So it's unlikely that we can say to you, go and do your own little normal set of standards. Imagine a scenario where the city of Johannesburg doesn't allow backyarders, and the city of Swansea says, no, backyarders, you are welcome. So that is the kind of scenario that we can't as national give you. So the issue of the norms and standards, I think it should be geographic and it should come from national. Because of again, it's one other issue that we were talking, and I was talking with a gentleman there and about the issue of, for example, determination of renters. I mean, you cannot want to charge the same rent in Madagascar, the same rent in Santiago. It's doesn't make any economic sense. So that is why there is justification why you got to regionalize it to specific areas and everything. But rest assured, I don't think that it's taking away your bylaws. You can't go and proclaim your bylaws. But I just want to find out that impact, because I think you are bringing the issue of the backyard, which I agree with you, it's a serious burning issue for you. But we are not trying to regulate the backyarders. You need to regulate the backyarders on your own while we give you the nonsense standard for the bigger rental market. And yes, you are in a dilemma because in some instances you are the landlord. So you have it buttered on both sides because you got to protect the tenants and in some instances you are the landlord. So you are conflicted in some degree because you are playing the dual role. We sympathize with you. But I think the bottom line is simple. This rental bill is aimed at protecting both the landlord and the tenant. And you as local government, you have to find your way where you fit. And we as national, there's no way we can subjugate or even impose a local competent authority, because in terms of IGR, it will be impossible. But consequently, you cannot bring your backyarders problem to us. You need to sort it out. Thank you.
I think the question about the backyarders, I think covered by my colleague there. I think what I would like to find out from Shaga is that I get a sense in which you feel that there is not being sufficient consultation here. And there has been plenty of time, so I'm not too sure why there is that feeling. And I think what we need to bear in mind, just to go on from the backyard, is we are covering legislation for rental accommodation from right up here in Constantia to right down there in the Sachs. So it's very wide, it's very broad, it's what some of the commentary has been on today. So I would like to ask Shoulder, whilst your emphasis has been on the backyarders, what has been your reaction to the rest of the amendments in the bill? Because we've taken great care to actually make this user-friendly. We've shifted things around. So, you know, are you seeing the rest of the bill? Is this your only problem? And you seem to have a big problem with the minister. And I think I need to say that although we may not appear to be on the ground, we are an active parliament and we are on the ground. So when we come to work on legislation, we are also feeding in what we have picked up from our oversight.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to Banka also for the presentation. I think I'm also slightly covered by the previous speakers. But I just wanted to point out, you know, just one area. The question of written offices being in writing. Yeah, because you are suggesting that this is not possible, for instance, with the backyarders. And you are quoting instances where, for instance, you call it renting, but you say it's non-monetary. I'm not quite sure about that, whether we can classify it as renting. But even if we do, I would say myself, well, whatever agreement is made between the landlord and the backyarder, that agreement is a contract. And in my opinion, I see no reason why such an agreement cannot be put in writing. But I think, as my colleagues have already said, I think I'm trying here to not only to control, you know, the renting industry, but also, you know, to improve the standards. I don't think that South Africans are going to stay in the situation in which we are forever, you see. So we have to find ways of improving, you know, standards in one way or another. And for me, this requirement that the leases be in writing is one of the things that is going to help, you know, to improve standards, norms and standards, but also improve the relationship between landlords and tenants, and make things easier when, for instance, problems arise, because everything will be on paper. There won't be unnecessary arguments, you know, between them. Everything will be on paper. I think it's also a way of educating our people, you know, about the importance of contracts, the importance of doing things correctly. That's how I look at it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Prepared to respond from Shebe Mamlo. When it comes, no, I'm saying because you are both together. So if she feels that you have left something, she can help. But before that, you know, the Constitution is clear. Constitution is clear, Chapter 3. Chapter 3. Section 154. Municipalities in cooperative government. Subsection 1. The national government and provincial government. by legislative and other measures must support and strengthen the capacity of municipalities to manage their own assets, to exercise their powers, and to perform their functions. It is here, if you look at it, it is there. Father, now you can do. You continue. Draft national and provincial legislation that affect the status, institutions, powers, or functions of local government must be published for public comment before it is introduced in parliament or a provincial legislature in a manner that allows organized local government, municipalities, and other interested persons an opportunity to meet representation with a party to the draft legislation. This legislation is not contradicting that because it's constitutional mandate. The clause you are contesting, no, the clause you are contesting, I don't know whether you were here when I was explaining to Professor as well as the Banking Association. That clause, it's the responsibility of Parliament. Parliament, let's think. That is our obligation. As convicted up there. As convicted. And the minister reports to us. So that clause relates to a situation where a law has been passed. And then when it comes to the regulations, they are tempered. They are not aligned to that particular legislation. And then you will receive complaints from the citizens, complaining about the legislation itself. And then when you ask, you are listening to the people, you will find that there is this juncture between the legislation and the regulation. Around the Venezuela, we not have the regulation. She declared that the nations as if she lied, as a compromise here, as a simple word of here, they are bound to some another. It is our responsibility. Neither the consultant department, by the legislation, and I try to have those regulations, is our consult, because it's a constitutional obligation. For which I am. Then Kanamade Fiala will ask them a question. Have you consulted Jesus? Have you consulted the public? And then if they are saying yes, we'll request, for instance, now, and this is now, that was publicly put, according to this, which way presented to the department, not with us, by the time they were drafting this legislation, they had done their obligation. Well, for the copies, we asked them, when we were dealing with the HDA regulations, we requested the NSAC has submitted a proper submission on HDA. So which means I is not aware of the public. What are the phone numbers that we do? It's on the moyam say mamlos. But sometimes it's just understand it's empowerment. It's not sure if the members of the Syria. How are we empowering you? You are empowering us because you are very grounded at the same time we have to empower you. Action, chapter 7. Okay, the full of the objects of local government to promote social and economic development, to promote a safe and healthy environment, and to encourage the involvement of communities and common organizations in the matters of local government. Umbuzo engibuza njengoba nize apha nizikonsultile ngezi-community eze nizipresentayo ngoku as you consulted those communities ngoba nidibene nakaunsila whom you are representing. Iphi input ye-community? Input ozanayo yomasipala. Ndifuna i-record ethi omasipala xa fika lele nto legislation by the consult, because in my constituency, fortunately, I never were women. Oh, no, 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 is in that, my father said that, the communist in my ward, the legislation, I've never, but the cyber is consulted. Then, after the time of consult, they come to you and speak on behalf of the communities. They have not yet, they have not consulted one of them yet. Because the tender secretary of the Avumela, Vizela Ubonyan, they say la. And they give you all the background and that is their responsibility to put by laws. How do you put one of them? Tie a matter who come in military, whatever you be. You cook whatever you kill. Those things will buy a friend. Must follow to the sin by laws that. Sin by laws on a side. Lanyaganyaganjava. And if by laws, yes, we will agree with you, which there is a gap, national department is formalized, because it's yet they can't realize. And we have been fighting with the department. Unfortunately, now we're in a process of amending the housing act as a whole. So all those processes are going to be inclusive there, but it does not mean in a sandwich of the regime. The bylaws. But at the end, they're going to be and who cools? You can't say, so the legislation is going to implement, you are bound to implement it. Because your bylaws cannot supersede the national legislation. So, let me tell you what even that person's oversight. So for us, we are given the obligation of oversight. We are given the obligation of oversight. So those areas, you must be careful, those people are listening to us. Sometimes you must interrogate. This is our case. Because what we are saying, nobody is going to ask you. Then we have that opinion. If any municipality must strive within its financial and administrative capacity to achieve the objects set out in this subsection, section 1. Everybody is all much smaller than you ever know money. They have got an obligation, constitutional obligation. But this legislation is very fair because we are saying once this legislation has been passed, once the legislation has been passed, it's going to be a transition period of 12 months to allow a budget cycle. To allow a budget cycle so that the budget is and we're very small as we must. Are you clear? So it's not that you need it. You have one thing that is out there, and it's in the kitchen, it's not banned, and it's all around the report. It's easy that you need to put for your government. So the issue of cost is not an issue. Secondly, fortunately, this is my second term. Yeah, I'm not going to go to. This is my second term. I was in this portfolio committee in 2004 up to 2009. The dollar of the committee. We have agreed that all municipalities must establish a housing, a fully fledged housing unit. What's the problem now? You don't have to have a charge. But then the oversight is sitting at 4 months by the office, not the housing office, not the housing office. So, for the call, that is why the city, there's no need. No passion don't have, but they say to the arm and society that may not have citizens are at least just to the fact. Say that, man, look. People, they put it in the legislation. They put it in the legislation. So that was so bad, they don't have. But for the community, in general, try to go to the legislation, it's clean, it's clean. So the letter is looking at it in God. Then you proceed. Also in the lower capacity municipalities. And then, in the additions, must refer the matter to a competent court within 30 days. What we are saying is, we take a language, one language. I wonder what it doesn't mean. We normally say, well, are you singing soprano? I'm singing baritone. But you are singing.
one song. We are singing one song. Because our people have been previously disadvantaged and they don't have money to go to court, courts are costly. There's that appeal that we have. And we fought for it. Not easy. Why? But not easy, my thing. Because we are representing the very community, the very constituents you are training that you are representing. We are representing that community. We fought for them. Would like a call up to avoid that one by name, my own, because they quickly ran to the court. If you can tell the story, there's a legislation that we have passed recently, which is called the sectional title. That legislation was not easy. Oh, my own, they were here, they were fighting that legislation. And they put them through. That is it. And that says, go and read that legislation. I'm giving you now the new food. New food. How have we represented those poor, vulnerable people there? See, what are the problems about tradition that I got? That's what I was done for. So, I've got at least, now we have over a fool like hell. We have no competent court in any job. It's not broken. We can change with the high court, the city competent court, bar of whatever. There we can change it. The issue, I'm just repeating that, but the issue of the budget changing, maybe Pinda can be laid off. But if you want to lay the norms and standards, the norms and standards are set nationally. Nina can call upon you, they have an attendant, house rules. Those things are going to be rules and regulations. The legislation cannot pick up everything. But that is why you want to monitor the development of those regulations. Those municipal services. So set up us, there's no number of negative direction. No. But when you come to issues of safety, health, and hygiene, basically in conditions including access to basic admin, science, all of us is compromised, we are not ashamed. What we are saying here, I will come back to the other one, the heart, but that heart, a mad house, it must be safe. Safety, safety. No good. Hygiene, hygiene. No whoopi. Let us not go much farther. Actually, in the power that they are, but that drains, they must clean those drains. That is safety of the people. Municipalities should take care of those drains. As a matter. So, we take care of the to make sure those landlords. I want the Mazane Puganda. Master, I love. I learned that some things are just talking, but for the kids, they put no push. How about that AI? We contain us. I saw the ones alone. The municipalities. All sorts of logic because the municipality must be careful to make it legal. I'm just saying it depends on the team. But when you start on a right, full right, but in consultation, consulting, constitution, but that's not specific to us. As people who are conducting oversight to the accounting authority nationally. Because Mark said the same thing. Well, this is the opinion. But I do say, Peter, say, take a look on the other. What would you do in the promote an exploitation? And if you come under my head, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say that. Don't make it. But the contract was 10 years ago. And then I go to the house. But then I went to the agreement. You want to buy how do they enter into those agreements? I don't want to buy a check. What is this people? Those people have this buy a check. But then I have to make a small loan. must not discover. We are encouraging this position, their relationship, it's an exploitative relationship. I don't have to buy you groceries, my salary. I have to pay you rent, your salary, this and this, and the bank. That is an exploitative relationship. So we cannot encourage it. As the parliament must do things right. How did you see the full of National Democratic Society? What society now are we building? So how are these particular parties, special parties, and they must promote, they must be empowered, they must know their rights. That is our responsibility, we must empower those people. So how can we do that? Because I've been there, I'm going to go to the land, and I'm no, let's empower them. Maybe the problem is that now the EPEP, if Azani has the right one concerns, pardon the legislation, I'm really, really perturbed. If Azani is alone. If they don't think so, let's be supposed to the committee to Azani. Because I think these things should have been explained during that consultation process. Then you see another one of the regulations. They are all the energy. That is why we are collecting. And this energy, they treat women neck. This bill is by the women neck. I can do that. By the women neck. What my feeling? That interaction, that relationship, let's make sure we can build. So we can have our corners there, our little corners. It's not that we are blaming you as a person. That is what we observed. That is what we have been experiencing. When we go to the municipalities, so is that it overlaps. We are experiencing problems in our municipalities. So see why they're by the game, so those things, but when they speak, they are representing people. You know, those things are happening. So, this expression, we are really convinced and we are really ensuring you that your concerns have been addressed by this decision. What we are lacking is that proper communication so that you are made to understand. But I hope so that today you know what the decision is all about. Mm-hmm. And we really, really request your support. Thank you to this decision. My brother.
I'm feeling honorable chair. Very excited. I'm not sure, chair. I must. Alison will add. Will do the addition. I'm really not sure. The premise of the house and including the chair to really be so extremely as if we are not supporting this legislation. It is not fair, actually. I must start and premise my input on that chair. When I started to make the input, I have said we have changed some of the inputs in the document. And that is why I said we must retrieve back the documents that we have. Now, it cannot be correct, chair, that we must be punished because we have omitted the first this. I want you to start from the honorable member when he was making a mention of in the first page on the introduction in slide number 3. I'm sure you have it. Well, there's a disclaimer. I said, honorable chair, that if in my input in the new document, we have deleted that. We have done our own consultation as municipalities. And by the way, honorable chair, yes, indeed, this is the responsibility of the department to do their own consultation with the public, with the community. It's not our responsibility, sir, because this is not our legislation. This is legislation by the department because it is our responsibility to legislate. We are not in contestation of that act. That must be understood clearly. We are not contesting the terrain of the national in terms of what we are doing. But we are raising issues here, chair, that says a father. And we have included the issue of the beggars because we said that
it's some point which the legislation missed. And that's what we are just saying. We're disputing the processes and everything. We've never here said we have not the department has not consulted us. And we have also said, and we have had, by the way, I also see that the Bureau of Human Settlement under myself as the chairperson of infrastructure. We have been part, and also we said, we have made some input also as well. Over and above other inputs that not necessarily communities, obviously the input that communities will make will go directly to the community, not to us. We don't solicit input from communities on your behalf. It's not our objective. We have said here that we have made some inputs because we have done work on our own, on issues specifically on Begadas, to say tomorrow in our NEC we are endorsing them. That is why we are saying once the NEC has endorsed it, because we are not yet solicited, but because we have done our own consultation, but we are only putting the matter before the NEC tomorrow after having consulted with municipalities. Our constituencies, our municipalities are harder. Now, after the having done that, Honorable Chair, we said we will present some of the document itself, we will present it to the MINEC in March on what is it that you have wanted to see in there. And I think it, this is a public hearing on the bill itself. And I really feel that the House is very harsh on us, whether it's justified or not. And unfortunately, Honorable Chair, also myself, it's my third term now as a councillor, and it is my second term in the position as the executive. Unfortunately, I understand the and all those what you have been Honorable Chair quoting, I understand it fully. And there is no way that we will undermine, as local government, there is no way that we will undermine what you are doing as legislature. Now, it can't be as we are, and when I started, I put it categorically clear that we support SALGA, we support the bill, as a point of departure. Now, it can't be that we are being questioned when we raise some of the issues that we feel that must be can be considered. Unless otherwise, we're not supposed to present, but we're supposed just to listen and endorse the process. And I really feel that when you engage, when it's a public hearing, you engage, you don't put others down and put yourself superior. We are interrelated, we are one government after all. We are fighting governments, we are not an opposition to governments, but as far as this is what we feel that we needed to come and present here, Chair. And I think it is well understood within those confines that we have done our job as SALGA, and in the initial stage we felt that, and as I said, and as we have said as SALGA, we said our vulnerable people have, this was long overdue. This is what I said, that this legislation is long overdue because it has been abusive, and they are continuing to be abusive within, especially among our people, for those who are our tenants, and that this will resonate and make sure that it normalizes the situation. So there's no way, I don't think, when we have ever mentioned something like we don't support this legislation. So please, I think maybe I might have been misunderstood, but I really feel that it was just unfair criticism on our part from the House. Thank you, Chair.
Before we are clear, there's no one who is criticizing. We are explaining the part of the legislation. You may have read this. And I've highlighted them, and I've responded according to what was read. I was explaining to you the legislation, the proposed legislation, what this section does it mean. So it does not say you are wrong. You have presented all of them. We've made the presentation, we clarified. That is a clarification of the bill. So that when you report back, you must say this clause clarifies like this because the context, I even say when you are reading a document, you have your own understanding of the context sometimes. So when you come here, it is our responsibility to clarify the context. I made a simple it's not SALGA only. Most of the presenters, they were questioning this session 15. And I clarified to them with this. It's not you. Okay. What does it mean? Who is it? Why is it related? Is it referred to the parliamentary committees. This happens always because the legislation is brought to Parliament. But there is a discounter. That is not your fault. That discounter is not made by you. It's made by our officials when they are doing their regulations. The figures are contradicting the legislation, which makes it difficult now to implement that legislation. We piggy sack. City Tinaloy legislation is parisid. Randy. But I'm it's the official regulations. That is why the regulations before the paper must be quoted. The consultation process. This is our quoting. I was quoting what you really put. Your rights have not been denied. You still have that right. And I still maintain that because I was clarifying. And I'm still going to clarify this much to the other. I will continue clarifying the content. I'm sure this was offended to say when I say we beg you to call us. That was not intended to say you are not. Because you said at the beginning, we know you support it. But we had the issues to be addressed. But it was just to say to affirm would please support the bill. Just like others. So I'm glad that you understood now. But no. We are responding to the under your understanding of the context. We are clarifying the context. That is our response. Because at the end of the day, the media is going to come to us. We have to clarify this bill. We have to make sure that the people understand the bill. The department has been given a task by this bill to make the awareness campaigns, to provide funding for awareness campaigns. Otherwise, my God, you said, please.
Because she's not actually heard most of the things that the team is saying so far.
Yeah. I must first of all apologize that my COFA is not up to scratch. Thanks for the opportunity just to clarify a couple things, because I'm not sure we did do a good job of communicating in the presentation. I think it's very clear from the section that includes the empowers the minister to make geographic-specific regulations. I can understand where that comes from. We're faced with a situation where there's extensive exploitation and abuse in the backyard sector, and we're obviously all aware of that. And so it's the role of national, nobody will dispute that, it's the role of national to step in and to make sure that rights are protected. And not just rights in formal tenants, but rights from informal tenants as well, regardless of whether they have a written lease. People have a right to access to basic services, to adequate housing, et cetera. So it obviously needs to extend to that. I can see that the thinking behind the insertion of the geographic specific clause was the recognition that for a market to function, and for there to be delivery of adequate units, you need to give enough space to the market so that the invention stands in. It obviously doesn't in the region longer, right? So there's got to be variation. We need to create an enabling environment for the market to function, and all the more so in an informal market, right? The difficulty, of course, is that there's this tension between ensuring the rights and letting the market function, right? So we need to make sure, and I think probably when I was giving this more thought last night, the best example perhaps is the Poverty Rates Act, in the sense that the national minister has the authority and has stepped in and said, this is the minimum threshold, these are the parameters the municipalities work in when they do their property rates policy. But within that, please go ahead and make variations that will allow you to pursue your objectives as a municipality and recognize the particularities of your own economy. Right. So I think probably what we need to think more about, and Salga is right there, and we need to do the thinking as well, is exactly the question you asked. What's the relationship between the municipal bylaws in the informal rental sector and the ministerial regulations? Because I don't think anybody in this room would dispute that you can't have a situation where a national minister is dictating a rent in Santon and also issuing a regulation that is only for Langa. I mean, there's no way that the minister can have specific regulations on every aspect of rental for every different regulations for every corner of the country. I mean, that won't work. So probably what we're talking about is an arrangement where the ministerial regulations create a threshold in the space that says this is a minimum safety standards and standards for services. And then municipalities need to shape that to their own markets and particularities. And that's where we've got to have called in municipal government and the national department talking together about what is the appropriate minimum standards, and then what role does the bylaws play in filling in the holes, you know, for particular communities. Because what's really important, and if we've learned anything from our research around backyarding particularly, is that you run this risk of when the state intervenes, you screw things up without intending it. And I'll give you an example of you're probably aware in Taocheng, the city of Joburg, where they went in and upgraded backyard dwellings, took out 10 or 12 shacks that were in the back, put in one or two proper dwellings, added services, et cetera, at the cost of the state. Well, that's great. But the question is, first of all, you had 10 shacks in the back. Which of the three families that get to come back? Right? So you have to split in the families. Who gets to decide that? Right? And then, of course, since the conditions are better, the rent goes up. So maybe the households that came back are perhaps to move now, go to informal settlements. Or the landlord puts in a relative, because now the situation is better in backyard units. So we're dealing with a very sensitive market when we're dealing with backyarders. And so we've got to make sure that any regulation that we put in, whether it's municipal or provincial or national, it doesn't matter, any state intervention won't disturb things so much in trying to protect the rights that it sends people to informal settlements and reduces the amount of affordable rental units that are out there. Because the reality is that a lot of backyard units are not sufficient. You know, there's abuse and exploitation. But they're also playing a really important role in making sure that people live in well-located places to cheap units. You know, they're a delivery mechanism that frankly is working really well considering we haven't done a whole lot with them. All right, so I think what we're really struggling with is how do we intervene and protect basic rights without screwing up the market so that landlords say, I'm not going to even bother with backyard rental. And suddenly all those backyard units in Lana are no longer there, and those people are displaced and moved somewhere else. So that's all that we're really concerned about, and I think that's what we were trying to raise.
I think we are talking about in the same language.
Yeah, I think we are.
We are saying you are going to participate.
Yeah.
They cannot deny you. They know, those people, they know, they won't deny you that right to participate when the regulations are.
I am aware.
You are going to form part of the stakeholders. That's why I said, they are short. The issue of the market, we've got the problem. Because the market is never been efficient. When the market says government has intervened, that's the bottom line. When the market thinks government has to intervene, I'll show you what I'm going to do.
Thank you very much. Because I'm going to conclude that.
Oh, so I'm going to
conclude. Well, you just had a couple of, just on that, Olga, in our research, you've been talking to the NBRS around the National Building Regulations. My understanding is there's going to be a review of those, and I think one of the things that we need to talk about is whether we need to have a separate set of safety standards for the informal sector than the formal sector. And I know that that's controversial, but we need to come up with some sort of regulatory arrangement that allows that market to still operate while protecting the rights. So I want to put that out there as something that we will work with the National Department on, we'll work with the NBRS on, and provinces on. Sorry, Chair, there's just two quick points that I wanted to make. One of them is that, just to clarify, municipalities have expressed concern that the requirement to set up an RHTIO will create costs. But the message that we wanted to communicate today was that we don't think that really is a concern. And that's because there has been a close reading of the amendment bill. It's very clear that that's been thought through. You know, the provinces are taking up some of the costs, national is playing a role. And I don't think that's not a concern. I think it's been very well addressed within the legislation, well designed. I think there are cost implications, but they have more to do with the enforcement of any regulations that come through via bylaws or ministerial regulations than they do with setting up the RHTIO. And I want to make it clear that those enforcement responsibilities, the municipality is not dealing them. It's the municipality's responsibility to enforce those. And one of the reasons that we have so many backyarders is because those zoning regulations have not been enforced up to now. So that's something that needs to be done. All we're saying, I think, is that we need to be thinking together about, does the province and the municipalities, what is it going to take for them to have the capacity to enforce whatever we put in place? because if we don't enforce it, none of these rights are going to be protected.
Enforcing or fostering a legislation or a policy. That is never easy.
And it's costly.
No. It's less costly. It has never been easy. People are our individuals, they don't do their jobs. That's the bottom line. And I'm sorry to say, when you are saying municipalities, in the municipalities, we have got public representatives. What is the role of the mother? I want to get a little bit of a can you see how to have a certain discussion? What is the role of a public representative? Because from the administration, a public representative. A public representative, they represent people. They have a responsibility to make sure that the laws that are protecting the citizens are implemented. So most of the laws are passed nationally, but they are implemented at the local level. Why? No. That is why the argument here, I request you, which no. Don't do any criminal, because in the end of the night, it's like a lot of time. I'm saying that it's like this. But we're not fighting. But the way you present these things, you put them as if all my father, they are independent. They don't have the responsibility. You know? Because whatever, before starting or enforcing the legislation, those representatives say, they must enforce it. Even before we arrive, God's process arrives in a blue moon. So, that is not an issue. That is not an issue. Those public representatives have got the constitutional mandate to represent their public. They are what I want to call them. I think.
Just one more point. I used to say that I want to. The councillor referred to a policy framework that we've put together as Halifax and Salt Lake municipalities. So I'd be happy to share that with the committee. But basically, it says what are the options available to local government to help with backgrounders and to, in terms of backgrounder intervention. And one of the things that's very clear is that in some situations, the policy and the legislative framework don't enable any kind of intervention. I'll give you an example. If you have existing situations of backyards being exploited on private land, how are we going to intervene? You need to get permission from every individual landlord, and then you're putting public money into a private earth. And so then we need to talk about what's the role of the state after that investment plan. So there's lots of policy issues. So we've been talking very closely to the National Department about changes to the USDG conditional grant framework or the HSDG that would allow municipalities to intervene and use those funding sources. Okay. So I just wanted to make it clear that that's on the table and we're working very closely with the department. So an example would be Cape Town had an intervention to provide services on municipal rental stock for backyarders. But they use the USDG for that.
Yes. The president, if the state of the nation address was clear, that we have to provide basic services to the informal sector. So if the municipalities are not doing that with their infrastructure, municipal infrastructure grant, yes, we are with you on the USDG. Because the USDG was not an initiative of the president. It was the national treasury. So that grant was just simply imposed by the national treasury, the right national treasury. But we are also with you because as this portfolio committee, we are negotiating with the national treasury to say that money must be extended to the secondary towns. So you can't blame the department as if it's the department that is refusing. It's the national treasury. So what we are saying, we are all together. And these challenges you are experiencing, we have already observed them as portfolio committee. And you are trying our best to assist. But that does not mean to say, oh, my father, I'm a sanitation.
from their municipal infrastructure grant. And they are supposed to 15%. There is 15% of the MIG. It goes to us. Yes. So I mean look at the colour that any company I can't but the resources are very minimal for now. And the thing of our so we need to go to those issues, but you must do things right and then you complain to say because we're complaining even our when we do our overhead, we find we talk with much fun. How much have you spent in your MIG to provide sanitation? We find that they are not prepared. So they are seeing some changes. We are we need to have a seminar.
I want to share, if you allow me to say that we are concluding our presentation and we are also requesting that should there be a possibility in the near future for us to come and actually unpack what we are talking about, because we might not necessarily be having the same understanding, because in terms of meat funding you can also spend, it's not out that you can spend your meat funds in your private land. So let's have a discussion, not a workshop, let's have a discussion, an engagement, as to, so that we are, at the end of the day, having, we must have a playing field, we must have a situation whereby we have an understanding, and we are all under in the same space, and so that we don't have perceptions of each other about what is it that we think we are having. You might be thinking that we are doing something that is not necessarily in line with what legislation tells us to do, and when we actually think that we are doing the right thing. So let us allow an environment where we have an interaction with the portfolio so that we can have a full-fledged discussion, so that we share what we think, the knowledge that we think we have. It might be different, it might be wrong, but we think we are doing the right thing because we are all guided by legislation, because there is no way else we can do. Thank you very much.
We are very proactive. We are working towards one goal, one common goal. So we need to have this direction. We will arrest that. Mama, thank you so much. Sitting in front of us. Oh, I don't want to do that.
Who were going through these situations, and it never became personal. And what was very shocking for me is I'm average, middle-class, intelligent, educated person who was able to mostly understand the system and was able to use most of the system. And yet the system still fails me quite badly. And in fact, and please take it from where it's coming, in that same committee hearing that day, the rental tribunal was instructed by the chair to make contact with me because they'd been part of my process and that it should have gone the way it did. To this day, I have never heard from the rental tribunal. I'll date trying to have made contact afterwards with him. And that was an instruction from a chair. And so I've spent the last few years since then, A, having to rebuild my life, but also working a lot with clients and with attorneys and with some municipal groups and various rights and other people through these situations, trying to see what more can I do to help? How can I help people to understand things more and for the system to become stronger, better, and how can we make all this work more? So I think what I want to say, I've been listening to that to everyone who's come in very formal capacities, and obviously these are the very important role players, but I like to just be seen as a grassroots person that's here today, someone who actually is one of the people who was part of what this act means and who on a grassroots level very often works with people who are subject to however these systems and these acts are affected. So I'm sorry, my computer and I were solving each other the last few days. I had to quickly fix up some things and get it printed now, which is why the print page should actually be the back page. But everything else I'll go through. I'm just going to address a few sort of subject headings. I'm not going to go to actual clauses of the Act because the parts I want to cover very much go to all the parts, and a lot of it has been covered today. A lot of what I want to say in different ways and in different angles has been covered today by various other role players, either in support of what I'm saying or on another viewpoint. Also, these are my notes here, so I will diversify them. I'm going to start off with the current suggested responsibility of the landowner in the rental situation. When I stood in front of the committee last time, I had a lot to say about landowners, and the committee brought up a lot of points, so I won't cover them again because it's obvious why landowners are landowners. It's obvious why people have tenants. I don't think you need to waste time hashing out, be it an income, be it an investment, be it whatever. We're aware of all of that. When I say the legal system favors landlords' rights in the Act and that the Act is not working, I don't mean that the Act itself, I'm sure that needs to go up. I don't mean that the Act itself is not working or is not able to work. I mean that how it's playing out and how it's being ruled, and Madam Chair, I wrote down just now very well said that very often people aren't doing their jobs in a lot of the places they should be. So when I say it's not working, I actually think the Act is really a very good Act, and I mean it is so much more than what we had many years back, and there is so much to be said for continuously coming back to it and addressing it and strengthening it. What I though do feel is it needs to be as effective on the ground as it is in these rooms or in written form, and that's what I'm going to go through a little bit just now. In the event of the default of a tenant, be it a middle urban tenant, be it a smaller tenant or whatever, we find that most of the responsibility ends up landing on the tenant. And by this, and I'm going to just talk because I know what I want to say, but all these points will be covered. By this, what I mean is, over the years, we've developed the NTR, we've developed the CPA, we've amended our Labour Law Act, all of which are designed to balance responsibility between parties. And I feel that the one thing I tried to suggest last time in my very emotional state back then is that there needs to be, in my opinion, from what I've seen, including when I've had landlords as clients as well as tenants, there needs to be a balancing of responsibility. If a lot of clients, and I see the next speaker will probably be addressing some of this, a lot of times landlords do an IDC check or do maybe check up on references and this and that. But more often than not, that is not a yardstick to measure information about a tenant. I think there definitely needs to be more of an assessment procedure by a landlord of a tenant. And in this case, I'm speaking obviously more of urban residentials. I'm going to focus mainly today on sort of urban residentials. A lot of
what I'm going to be speaking about will also refer to the township renters, tenants, and a lot of the smaller tenants. A lot of what I'm going to go through would are very beneficial points for them as well. And the township one is something I feel is also a very big issue because there's no governance of any of this in the townships. So we have a situation where, and it was mentioned by the Banking Association and by one or two others, that also very often tenants fall into a situation that is completely out of their control, as we know. They get retrenched, or they get ill, or they're in a car accident, or they're self-employed, something, maybe large contracts cancelled, whatever. And the current situation allows for a fairly quick cancellation of lease and a fairly quick application to court to go and then evict the person. And as we know, I'll cover that, I'm jumping in the chat. And one of the things that I think one needs to look at is, yes, definitely if somebody is employed, that one should possibly look at including retrenchment insurance into the, because the insurance is still very new in all this, but a retrenchment insurance into this application or social security, because then at least there's a cover there. There is also very often the option of surety from a variety of different parties. It can be family, it can be employees, it can be whatever. And most leases, in fact all leases I've seen, have clauses that refer to sureties and the ability to sureties, and yet they're hardly ever exercised. I also noticed that very often when a surety is in place, and it was one of the things that happened in my situation, when surety is in place, I was very, very gobsmacked to find out that law is not obliged to utilize that surety, even if it was a requirement of the landlord to have the surety in place at the time of signing the lease. So landlord said, I'll give you the lease providing you give me a surety. Right, I can understand it. So you give them the surety, something then maybe does go wrong, and then apparently the landlord is entitled to not have to exercise the surety. And they can still apply for eviction based on the circumstances of why the you then ended up in situation. Which then again leaves it very open for very little, for most of the rights going to the landlord's side. I can't help feeling, and I chatted to quite a few lawyers and landlords very deep in the last few weeks, knowing I was coming here to hear their input on this, and most of the time, and I mentioned it to the gentleman from the Banking Association earlier, most of the time I have a favourable input, and I said, the problem is the courts are overloaded. They are drowning in applications, or even the group matters in that. On the lease agreements, it would maybe be very productive for the Act to look at regulating more of the actual lease agreements or the actual conditions of leasing more. And insofar as if the lease had to make space or an ability whereby should the landlord be in a position to, but that after doing the assessment, that a certain time period could be offered to somebody in a problem, be it a month, be it 2 months, be it 3 months, be it if that amount were to be added on at the end of the lease as a month. There are obviously ways, but I just feel that the landlords don't come to the party. They don't do much to work with the tenant, with the issue, with the situation, and they very, very quickly go to court. Your lease very strictly allows you a cancellation period if the first month of our planning isn't paid, you may give notice, and then if notice isn't addressed, you may then shortly afterwards apply to court, and then it becomes a very long process. Whereas if the landlord and the tenants were get together looking for a solution for a reasonable time period, and if not, then the tenant agrees in the original lease that after that they would vacate after a month's notice. That would also make the court procedure a lot more fairer, because then by the time you go to court and you're arguing for the eviction, you having looked at resolutions. As far as the responsibility of the court, though, and this legislation on the front should have been at the back, it is from one of the attorneys that I've worked with on and off over the last few years. He, in fact, was my attorney on my matter some years back, and then supported me when I said I would like to do more information, more research into this. So he and I get together and he tells me on strengths and weaknesses of cases he's dealing with and that. And I asked him to please just give me his input for today so that the House could also see from a lawyer's viewpoint, and he's done it very neutrally. The problem that I found with the court from many, many cases I've sat in on over the last 2-3 years and many more that I've read having taken the judgment off the rolls, is that the courts very much favor the landlords a lot of the time. The attorneys come in with the affidavits, obviously, which are presented, and these affidavits give whatever the attorneys decided as the facts that are going to go into court, and it gets argued out by these two sets of attorneys in court. Very often, and Madam Chair, this is a point you raised, people are not empowered. They don't understand their rights or what they can do. So you end up with this whole long court process. It can be very protracted, very dragged out. I mean, I've known a matter that dragged on, a pie application that dragged on for 14 months. In average, a pie application can drag on for 6 to 9 months. The only people winning out of this are the lawyers. And in the process, that time period could have been, I mean, because once you cancel the lease, you don't get paid rent after that. So as a landlord, in theory, you've shot yourself in the foot because you must sit in court for 3, 6, 9, 12 months not getting rent, and you could actually productively use that same time period, possibly in with a lesser rental, to find a resolution to the issue. I also find that it's my opinion that there needs to be more focus on the actual landlord and the tenant, especially in court applications. That the landlord and the tenant themselves should maybe actually take the stand, or very often the tenant. Because very often what the landlord's attorneys put in the paper and what the tenant's attorneys put in the paper is a very small fraction of the story. The rental tribunals, I think the concept of the rental tribunals is an amazing concept, and really the idea of them to work will be very good. I just feel that they need to be more involved than what they are. And the municipalities definitely, in all PIE applications, the municipalities are supposed to be included. And I have very often seen that the municipalities don't even respond to the papers that they are submitted with. So I feel that the Act, and just listening to Solda and everything now, a lot of it goes down to it. A lot of the shifts, and as you correctly said, Madam Chair and the Honourable Gentleman, that a lot of the focus on the shift with municipalities. I've had situations where people have been rendered homeless overnight. I've phoned various places. We've been told to connect with the municipality. And there are municipalities in areas who have no understanding of how to deal with the problem. They have no person to talk to. They have no situation. They just have absolutely no ability. So I feel that we definitely can put a lot more focus on the tribunals and the municipalities being made to work with this. And Madam Chair, as you said, the empowering of the people. Your middle to lower class people are not aware. Most of them are not aware the tribunals exist, or that they have. I think in my mind it would make sense that the court should not accept applications for the middle to lower tenants unless they've first been through possibly tribunal, or they have been appointed a legal resource person or a legal aid person, because very often they aren't appointed. Very often landlords apply for actions, and the person they're applying for can't afford a lawyer and doesn't know and doesn't understand that they have places they can go, and this creates a lot of situations. Another place where I feel, and I'm just really doing it briefly because so much of this has been covered today. Again, I'm just giving it from grassroots level, from the things that I've experienced over and over and over the last few years. One of the places I am very passionate about, and I'm going to show the house some pictures just now, and I'm using mine because then it's mine. I'm not using anybody else's because I wouldn't want to do that, and I would have to go around getting permission. But one of the things that we all feel very passionate about, and I see that I think the Act really could look at this angle a little bit stronger, is the role of the sheriff in all of this. The sheriff should be very accountable for how they feed people, how they execute their orders and do everything. And fair enough, when one gets to a point that an eviction order has been granted, that is fine, it is the sheriff's job and that is what he must do. The conditions under which the sheriff and his people do it. I have, in my own case and many other cases, been part of where the sheriff literally hires casual laborers off the street for the day to be part of removing that furniture. I will show you pictures of what they do. the theft of goods that goes on in people's evictions is horrific. And I mean, you're already going through all the trauma. The conditions, I mean, on my particular day, it was raining. And I only found out afterwards when I went and read the act the sheriff falls under that in the event of rain, they may not continue. The attorney at the time phoned their attorney at the time, and it was hard fortunate, and said, look, could we at least please have the protection of this? Landowner's attorney gave instruction for the eviction to proceed in spite of the rain, and the sheriff continued to carry it out. And again, I use my personal one so that I don't have to, you know, I don't want to use anybody else's name for that, but I have seen this happen many times over the last few years. I've also seen occasions, and I've been witness to occasions at times, where the sheriff is rude, or very bullish, or very arrogant, or belittles the people. Well, the landlord stands there and says nasty things, and it becomes a very, very undignified moment all round. And I just feel that there needs to be more accountability by sheriff, and there needs to be possibly a better structure for where one can complain of actions of the sheriff, or if the tribunal needs to be more involved on an eviction process or on the sheriff's behavior. But I really feel that one of the reasons the sheriff's officers do this is because they can. I was going to catch up with where I am. I think that so much of the acts and related acts in the tribunal and the CTO are incredible and a wonderful act. Some of them have been poorly rolled out and some of them are not being monitored to such. I've sat in on hearings of the tribunal where the tribunal is very much like the small class court. It is certain people from outside fields who sit in on these hearings. And it has created, in my opinion, at times, depending who's holding these hearings, a cowboy effect, which one sees in the small claims courts as well. Because as the previous, I think it was Legal Resource Centre mentioned, there is no recourse after this other than High Court. And even then, the recourse is very narrow and limited, even if some should have the ability to go. And this is something I raised last time as well. And I've sat in on several tribunal hearings and being part of civil tribunal matches in the last few years, and I found again that if you have a situation where someone's either not doing their job, or they're doing their job possibly from a not the best interest of the situation viewpoint, the person on the other end has no recourse, and I really think that possibly needs to be considered. I wish to question or maybe wonder why the gentleman from the Legal Resource Centre said it was so expensive to get copies of recordings. I know at magistrate court, you know, you pay a small fee, you put a CD in and you get it in a day or two or three. So I don't know if that is an issue. I haven't tried to get a recording for the tribunal, but if that is an issue, it should definitely be looked at, because it takes nothing to burn a CD and put the recording on that. I really feel that before high applications should be allowed to be considered by courts, one should have had other stopgaps in place so that you can't have landlords just going off to a court, or you can't have these long protracted court cases where there really are a lot of losers at the end of it. And I do feel that it would be very useful if the tribunal becomes more of a criteria. And I also feel that when an eviction should, I mean, I feel that maybe in the Act, if the municipalities are being cited in pay applications, surely then if their names on the documents, they should have representation in court. And they should be there to represent why they can or can't, or what they can or can't, or what's going on. And in the various matters I've dealt with, either municipality hasn't sent representation, or they've merely just filed papers. Well, sometimes they haven't even filed papers. And the court hasn't even picked up on it that the person responsible as per the Act, or the regulatory body as per the Act, is not present, isn't being part of this process. I mentioned legal aid and legal resources. I really think that should be a criteria, because a lot of people don't know that they can get this help. And this is just off the cuff or something, but very often there are children involved in evictions, and more often than not, than animals. Now, I realize a lot of people might not care much about the animals, but the people who have pets care about the animals. And very often the sheriff arrives, opens the doors, and the pets just go running. This poor person dealing with the trauma of the situation, it's not dealt with a dignified way more often than not. They might often have children that are very upset, stressed or something, they're going to deal with them. And then they, so possibly a social worker needs to be appointed where a victim has minor children in the house, so that they can at least monitor the process or assist or be part of something. The other thing that I, and if I missed, please excuse me, I didn't see it anywhere in the new amendment, there was any wording or anything that allowed for verbal agreements or emails or SMSs, which is becoming a very much new part of law today. But what's still happening a tremendous amount with lease agreements is there's always a clause that says unless reduced to writing by both parties, it will not be agreed on yet, so on, so on. What often happens, and I've seen it several times, is the landlord and the tenant will have emails or SMSs discussing something, putting something in, taking something down, totaling something off, paying half rent now, half rent, something. And then later on that situation changes or another situation comes up and that situation needs to come to court as part of the evidence. And then if it is disregarded as evidence because it was not formally reduced writing by both parties, and signed off and put away. So suddenly, where the tenant thought, I'm okay because I've got this email that says, yes, you can pay on the 9th or the 12th or the 15th. And now the court says that's not admissible because it wasn't reduced to writing signed by both parties. I don't know how one addresses the problem because a lot of these things, but for me, one of the things, and I think, Madam Chair, you might feel this will fall back in under the municipality, is the situation in township rentals. A lot of my clients live in Jackson Township. And if they lose their job, something happens, or they need things, there seems to be a very rough situation in the townships where you can be just picked up. There is very little of this legislation coming to get through to that area. Very often I've said to people, phone the tribunal, they've got inspectors, let them come out and help you. And sometimes they do phone and sometimes they don't. But Madam Chair, I fully agreed with what you said about empowering people, because if we empower more of the people to know their rights, to know that there is a tribunal, to know that they have rights, I think that'll go very far in helping them to help themselves. The state, there is a lot of legislation in the Constitution and in this Act about the state providing housing. And while I understand where it's coming from, and because I haven't got through my notes verbatim, if you read later, you'll see I said, I don't necessarily agree with the concept of the state must just provide, because what I see happening on the other side is that very often people, I'm all having off, so I'm not following through. Very often people are then just expecting that help automatically, where they are then not helping themselves at all, or not trying to help themselves. And very often people disempower themselves by just saying, okay, you must now come help me and give me help. And I've had a lot of situations like that as well. So I feel that a lot of these, by involving tribunal, more legal aid, more, and various other aspects, and by involving the landlord themselves more, we need to try and create a more proactive balance between both parties. Because even very poor people who have very difficult circumstances sometimes have a means to be helped, or they have family or something, but it definitely needs to be looked at and considered. Just want to see if I've mostly covered everything that I wanted to on this side. I don't know if at any point it has been discussed, because I realize it's not on the table at the moment, but maybe at some point an ombuds, some sort of governing regulatory body, one could go to whereby one could take these situations, because at the moment it's court and or possibly tribunal, and both of them can have very, very possible stopgaps for the people trying to use these. There's a lot going between, but so much of it has been covered today, and I know we're running behind on time, and I think you get the gist of what I'm trying to say. I just want to show you something. I have told the police, but I will give her a CD with all of this on it. This, I didn't give this to you because a lot of it is research information, which I'm going to give police, but she can send it all to you. There are two documents in here that were research articles written, one by legal body, some of them you might have had, and they speak in great depth of the failure and inability of the courts to be able to be. A lot of the magistrates are either not very well versed in Thai, or they appear to be very impatient with Thai, and they just want to push it through. A lot of them, depending which areas courts you go sit in, they are very favourable towards the landlord.
So I will go through it all, and I know we still have more talks on the day as well, so I will be giving this to Kulis, and she'll be getting it all to you. And there are various reports and case laws in there. I have more, but I've tried to choose the ones that sort of support what I'm trying to say. And then I want you to look at this. While I understand that eviction can never be a good and even pleasant situation, I want you, okay, so I don't think it's going to go bigger, much larger. All right, it's not going to go bigger, so we might have a bit of a problem, and I can't make it bigger. Have I? Or so does this Madam Chair? This is the last of it, because didn't I start late? And didn't we start 2 minutes late with me? Or 15 minutes late? We started late. I just want to show you, okay, you can't see properly on the picture because it's not big enough, but if you have a look, you'll see, if you look carefully, but then it'll be on the CD. The furniture was literally thrown outside. This table is upside down and thrown and broken. That cupboard was thrown and broken. Everything was thrown and broken. It wasn't even loaded out. Again, you're not going to see it on here. It'll be on the CD. If you ever look at the computers and you get the picture, you'll see that this equipment is covered. It's full of rain. It's completely wet. I mean, if you ever look, this is what they usually look like. Now, while I agree, I mean, there's us trying to cover up the stuff at the time and stop the rain from affecting it. I mean, this is just some pictures of what it looked like. That was when I managed to catch my dog. She wasn't very happy. But you can see they don't even load it out for you. Well, we actually didn't find two of our other animals that day. It took us 3 days to find our two other animals. They were so traumatized. So we had to keep coming back every day. And if you ever look, I mean, it wasn't even loaded there. Here's your furniture, here's your boxes, here's whatever. But in our case, we were actually almost packed up. But these are some of the pictures of many. But everything was thrown out, literally just thrown in a pile that it wasn't even packed out. It was thrown out and it broke, it got damaged. The sheriff's people themselves, these laborers that he hired, stole, I have to allege, because the case is long ago. I allege that they stole all the jewelry, all the technical things, cell phones, hi-fis, DVDs, all of that went on that day. It was gone, it was stolen. A variety of other things. One or two of the guys were very drunk and got more drunk as the day went on. This, while these are my pictures from many years ago, these are the pictures of how most evictions occur, and I've seen them over and over again. I just don't want to use anybody else's pictures. So I just really feel that if and when an eviction does come to a point, I mean, everyone in this country has rights, including prisoners and that, and just because you're being evicted for whatever your circumstances is, should not mean that your dignity goes. And it shouldn't mean that they get to make jokes about you. And if you have personal effects that are very personal, and some of us do have, and they get to make jokes about it, and they get drunk, and they steal things. And this wasn't a one-off. I have witnessed this several times. And then the very last thing that I want to say, while the Act and the Constitution both say that all relevant circumstances must be considered, I have yet to sit in on a case or read a case where I can look every one of you in the eyes and say to you that the court considered all relevant circumstances. I have never found that. And that is a big failing. Because if they actually did their job then, I think a lot of the situations would have very different rulings. I'm done.
Thank you very much, Ms. Simon. Nadia. Honorable members, there is the presentation. Comments?
Thank you. Yes, I do remember you coming the last time, and indeed it was a very formative time for you. I think you've painted a very real picture for us today of some of the real suffering that happens when this sort of thing happens, especially referring to the elections. Because you're on the street and where do you run from here? And I think what we've tried to do in this legislation is to take care of the very things that you are talking about. We want the vulnerable people, the weaker people, if you like, to benefit from this legislation. So I think you haven't specifically referred to any of the legislation, but what you have done, you've referred to the leases in writing, and whether perhaps we should be considering emails, SMSs, but I think, you know, certainly I think the emails would still give us some, and I think that possibly an option. And then your mention of the tribunals, it came out in the research with the people who are running tribunals that about 80% of the cases are actually taken care of there, and we have these for the very purpose of reducing costs for people who are caught up in this. Now, in your experience, are you saying that there are bigger numbers requiring court cases than the tribunals are able to take care of?
Just a big convention on sending them, and I think you've given us a grassroots included account. You were not technical, but call it out. And you've given us that. I mean, the retrenchment insurance you're talking about is more or less the same as the Banking Association's call for the Human Rights Commission's recommendation, where they said we must look at post time of insurance on when people are destitute. So that's quite something to look at. And the issue of access to justice in terms of bias towards landlords. And I think that is what we are trying to do here. That a big word here is redress, in making sure that we look at this in balance and we strike a balance between the rights and responsibilities of both the landlord and the tenant. And I think the lack of monitoring. And that is why Section 2 is designed to make sure that the minister come and account to us to give us the impact of this legislation. So in terms of monitoring, that is what we definitely are doing. And you've given us a food for thought as far as that is concerned. And I think the written list, I agree with Honorable Bowman. SMS, I'm not so sure. Verbal is a no-no because it must be in writing. That is the essence of everything. An email, unless it's structured in such a way that it has legal standing. Because what we're trying to do here is to make sure that this thing has got legal standing for both the landlord and the tenant. And thank you for that practical grassroots account of what it shows, that when you've got a practical experience of things, you speak much more about it rather than, you know, speaking from a bottom point of view. Thank you for that. Thanks.
No, thanks so much. My colleagues have already responded very well, because mine was the use of email. Emails are signed. The scan is signed. It is not signed. I don't think it can be affected, but we consider it could be. At the same time, most of the issues will appear on the regulations. Most of the issues will be raised. They will also be considered. But we'll make sure that if the legislation gives that opportunity, that they must also address in the regulations. Thank you so much.
I just very quickly respond on that. Just on the leases, in quite a few other legal areas, they are accepting emails today. And what I'm saying, so many people today, I mean, everyone's here sitting with tablets and that, it's becoming the new norm of communication. So I think one needs to definitely look at that, because even most of us, my clients will send their instructions on email. They'll tell me to do this, do that, do whatever. I think it's definitely become the new way of communicating. So many people communicate through SMS, but I think email specifically then, at least, and you know it's come from an email address. And on the thing of the leases as well, what I did put in my notes, which you can read later, is also I'm thinking that I know the tribunal has one, but I'm thinking that possibly the reason I didn't go specific to all the sections of the acts and the regulations is because I wanted to create a picture, paint a picture of all the things that you have amended here so that you can see how at grassroots levels I'm saying we feel the amendments are going to support or not support, and then you can take what, from what I said what you feel. But also possibly within regulation, if one has more of a regulating around a standardized leasing, because what I'm also seeing happening is you've got a variety of leases that end up in court, and they come on this long and come on this long, and that affects the argument of the court. It affects whether very often you've got a simple tenant who doesn't understand 12-page assignment, but we also now have the new simple wording law in place. So leases shouldn't be long, drawn-out things anymore. They should be more simple. And so I think possibly a more standardizing around leasing would also be an option to look at. And in answer to your question on the tribunals, I think it's a bit of both. I think some of the manner, the cases that are being handled in the tribunal are leading questioning still in how a lot of the more complex ones. I think the tribunal very quickly solves the easier ones, did you, didn't you, can you, can't you. But there are a lot of the rentals of more urban become a little bit more complex because it might be a self-employed person or it might be the landlord rather. There could often be things. But I also feel that the awareness of being knowing that you can go to the tribunal and knowing what the tribunal can do for you. I mean, I regularly say to people, do you know what the tribunal is? And more often than not, I get no, which goes back to what Madam Chair said about the empowering and that. And then I just want to, in closing, say two things. The reason I didn't cover technicals is because so many people who are the main role players have covered a lot of what I'm saying in different ways. I wanted to, as you correctly said, I wanted to bring in this is what I go through every day. This is what my clients go through type of experience. And then the last one, if I can just say that on the monitoring side, I definitely think some sort of monitoring of the sheriff, because you've got no idea how some of them are really nice sheriff officers, but on the whole, a lot of them at these moments, and they, as I said, they shouldn't be allowed to hire somebody just off the street on that morning. It should be somebody who's trained in them or working with them, and there should be a code of how they deal with you and how they unpack your stuff or something. So I definitely think from the regulation, you would like to see something there. That's it.
Your concern is the conflict of interest. The issue of there's a point that you have raised, I've forgotten that this is in the bill. What was the second point? No, not about the second.
Very well, we're very fine. We can try and
refer the other meetings, the members who attend for other committees. Just try and summarize, because it might happen that most of the issues you can be able to make
it. And you all have the. So, I think everybody has any questions on you, those, and they can ask them. But I'm here from a practical point of view. I'm not an attorney. I'm not a highly educated person. I work in a rental agency, and I work with tenants and landlords every day. We're in the middle, and we need to protect both sides. And there's always three versions of the truth: the tenants, the landlord, and the truth. And what we look at is what is actually happening here. And we will always advocate for the tenant. If you cannot pay your rent, rather move out. Don't let it become a big thing, because it's going to follow you. You're going to end up with a bad credit record. You're not going to get the references if it goes onto the tenant profile network. Rather move out. On our leases, we ask, do you have an alternative address where you can go and say, if it should happen that you lose your job, that you cannot pay the rent, it is a requirement. We have to have it. Because bad things happen to good people. And we try and get a landlord to understand this. And what Simone was saying just now, there's a lot of what I agree with what she said. You know, but it's not, from where I'm standing, the law is not on the side of the landlord. The law is on the side of the tenant, and it shouldn't be that way. Justice is blind. You need to look at the facts. Landlords cannot be held hostage by the fact that municipalities do not have accommodation for people that lose their jobs, get dreaded diseases, terrible things happen to them. And landlords being held responsible, they are being held hostage. And I agree, housing tribunals need teeth, give them steroids. The courts shouldn't be dealing with all these fights, because, as she said, nobody's getting richer except the attorneys. I've sat in seminars that are given by attorneys that specialise in evictions. And it always shocks me, and it's a little bit distasteful that these attorneys seem to relish going to court with these things. That's not how it should be. It should be, this is a bad situation. The landlord is renting out his house because he lost his job and has got a small income and he's downsized. So he's moved into a little townhouse so that he doesn't lose his house at the bank, because he can't sell it anyway because there isn't a buyer's market out there, because nobody can get funds. So he's downscaling. Now he's got a tenant who a bad thing also happens to. And the tenant says, so now go to court. And the attorney ends up with a deposit for a fancy new Audi or something. And the landlord is held hostage. No rent for 6 months. At the end of the day, the tenant, the hard reality is the tenant walks away scot-free. He gets thrown out eventually. But he walks away. And the landlord has to suck up that loss. And that is not right either. Tenants shouldn't be brutalized, but landlords shouldn't be held hostage either. The housing tribunals need to be given more heat. I've sat in those hearings, and as an agent, I have felt brutalized. I have not felt that the tribunal hearing has been fair. I feel like I'm in the firing line. I go there expecting and knowing that I'm going to be treated like I am already a guilty party, and that it's the tenant that's okay. I have tape that has been sitting at the housing tribunal since February last year. We were there, on the day. He insisted, tenant refuses to meet with me, refused to give me the documentation so that I can try and help with all this, because this is one of those situations where this is a public rental, the whole thing needs to pop, and the landlord says, yeah, fix it. But now the tenant won't give me the documentation that I need to fix it. He insists on going to the tribunal. So we all duly arrived. He was late. The tribunal hearing sat there. They said to me, it's over. Please stop. He wasn't here for hearing. It's closed. It will only be open for a very, very good reason. And I said, what is a very, very good reason? And the lady said, the presiding officer said, a car accident, surgery, something like that. None of those things happened. He was late. And we're back. For the surgery, we're going to be seeing things. Because he managed to get it reopened again. I've tried to get cases reopened at the housing tribunal, and I've been shown them. But that's not the issue here. The
housing tribunal can be given more guns. They have the same legal standing, from what I understand, as a magistrate court. So if a magistrate's court issues a document, an order, or something, it gets served by the sheriff, and the case can be done. When the housing tribunal issues something, nothing happens. Tenants sit back, they don't do anything, and then the landlord has to go to an attorney. So while the concept of the housing tribunal is brilliant, it doesn't have any teeth. And landlords and tenants need to go somewhere to get away from magistrates, as Simone pointed out, a lot of them don't know what they're doing. Each one's got a different criteria. Then the housing tribunal needs ammunition and needs to be able to do stuff. And I'm sitting back as the person who's in the middle that has to try and work within that as it is now, which unfortunately in some instances doesn't help because it's not written in such a way that it's workable for a man in the street. If that makes any sense. You know, one thing in particular is the deposit, the refunding of deposits. So it means the penalty is a disaster. For months, nobody could electricity accounts. We have to refund the tenants' deposit. And we can't refund them their whole deposit because we don't have the account yet. And they look to the tribunal, and that wastes the tribunal's time. What else is there that the leases, electronic communication, it's happening everywhere. You know, I've sat in a seminar about evictions and stuff that was given by Stan and Stan. Sauna Stan, she specializes in evictions, that's what she does. And she kept referring to tacit agreement. If it's in an email, it's a tacit agreement. So there's no consensus. You've got a attorney telling you one thing, and then you're going to court and something else is happening. And it makes it so much harder. And agencies are expected to try and resolve and keep both parties okay and make sure that neither one of them is exploited or abused by another. But unfortunately, from where I'm standing, a lot of instances, it's the landlords that are using. Because the time frame to get anything going done are extremely long. And a tenant shouldn't be in the position either where he doesn't know exactly what is going on for a period of time. It needs to be quick. If a tenant can't afford to pay his rent, he's got friends, he's got family, and the municipality should be able to help. And the tenant's disaster should not become the landlord's burden. And that is unfortunately what is happening in a lot of instances. Some of the landlords, I will agree, have no sense of humanity and they view tenants as cattle. Get them in, they can't pay, get them out, or take the doors off, or take the windows off, whatever. It doesn't work that way. These are all human beings, it's a highly emotive subject. Where people live, that is where they feel safe. And as Simone said, I agree with her. I have seen instances where the sheriffs go and they do the job. And in this one particular instance, which is well documented in counting, it wasn't even the sheriff's fault. The landlord and his attorney were standing there, and the sheriff's men were carrying everything out, and the landlord was chirping and taunting. The tenant walked inside, but he's going to shut the sheriff. I know it sounds like the song, but it happened. The sheriff is now in a wheelchair. There shouldn't be anybody there that doesn't know what they're exactly supposed to be doing there. So that's short and sweet. You have all the notes. If you skim through them and had a look at them, and you want to ask me anything, that's fine. Thanks. I'm not in a situation time. You're all educated people. You know what the Act says. You have my comments. It's just from a working point of view, a lot of it doesn't work. It takes too long. It's too protracted. It's unclear. It's fuzzy. It's not workable. Okay.
very much, Ms. Parsons. I think your input is very worthwhile. I think it's almost similar to one with 99. Tarika has presented because you are on the ground. But I think you have to give yourself another opportunity to read this bill. I really don't understand how most of the people have read this bill. Because the issue of the courts that are expensive, the committee has tried to address that one. It must be a last resort. That is why the committee has brought forward the appeals process, because we are trying to make sure that people must, those people who have got resources, they quickly run to God at the expense of the people that are hard or do not have. So the bill is trying to address that. For Ms. 99, the issue of performer, yeah, if the performer wanted to respond to him, yeah, those fees happening. There's no need to have the one of those rules about going to commercials and so on. No. Just a 1 page or 2 page, 1.5, a pro forma, and the department is going to develop that because it's a minimum necessary argument. It's not fine. It's not a big
It shouldn't be a long involved document. The fact of the matter is that in terms of the Consumer Protection Act, you have to detail everything. You have to say in point form, and this is one of the other problems.
No.
The Consumer Protection Act,
no.
When you take that into consideration,
no.
You've got to literally say that you have to tell the tenant all his rights.
No. People are telling me what they are saying. It does not mean what we are expressing is that it should be in writing.
Yes.
But we are not expecting to have a big contract. That is the bottom line from the rental housing bill. We know that we cannot sit and say that there is no time for that. But what we are saying, all those very important issues that are agreeing upon, for instance, here, that's what I was saying, the document is very clear. You have raised issues of the telephones and so on and so on. I don't know if the regulations, those things, we cannot put them here. We're still going to discuss them. It is irrelevant. Because if you're saying you're giving me a rent of 1,000 rand, you must, it means from that 1,000 rand, you must do a big time. So we cannot discuss those issues in the legislation itself. They will fall under the regulations, and you will be invited to make an input in the regulations. So, most of the issues, but the issue of the, that I think has been addressed, I mean, the very important point that we have made, the issue of maintenance. That point is very good, and it has been an omission from the side of the portfolio committee to indicate the lease agreements, I mean the conscience of the house. You have to make sure that you do inspection. Those three occupy inspections. So they don't reflect in the current draft. So of which we are going to consider, because the presenters that came before you, they raised that. So I think really it has to, because if I occupy the room, that means the room, I must know, and you must also know what are the issues. So that when I say come and repair this, you must come and repair it, because you know that I occupy that room with these defects. So I think your issues are very, very clear, and we will sit down and consider them. But there is not only no can afford to turn to the court, it has been addressed.
by the Jesus has been attacked through those appeals process. And at the end of the day, we know people are people. We must not think that walk up to those doors. People are not all angels. So we must know that characters of people, one will make sure that they dress into the court. But what we are saying, all the process, necessary process must have been followed before the court. It must be a last resort. Members, do you have any comments?
Starting from the NCCK amendment of 31, and then the question of repairs and the question of joint decision team in discussion prior to the hospital, everything is clear. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Well,
I just would like to add to the question of the contract, the size, length, and content of the contract. I think what we are saying in the legislation is that the minister must produce a format. Now the format won't be long, the format will be short, but the format will try as much as possible to include all the important things about the list. That should appear in the list. But now the details of that are going to depend now on the vendors. But otherwise, the format is any length also to assist those people who do not have the experience in carrying out leases, so that they should know what the main things about the lease are, what should be contained in the lease. We know some people are already very professional in that, contracts have been drawn for over the years. We're not talking that, but we are saying at least the maximum standard, nothing below this.
No, I personally don't believe that a lease agreement should be more than two pages. It should stipulate the landlord's name, ID number, if it's through an agency, the landlord's contact details don't need to be on there. That client is employed in the agency. That must be the job. The address, the number of bedrooms, what is the rent, the deposit, lots of water if you're paying it, refuse and sewer if you're paying it. And then, in compliance with what it says in the Act, what are the tenant's obligations? You can look after the property. If you break it, you fix it. It needs to just be simple. It doesn't need to be these six-page documents that we're ending up with. And as the Consumer Protection Act that has thrown that spanner in the works, because the Consumer Protection Act says we have to inform the tenant of his rights. So you basically have to say, you have to mow the lawn. You have to clean the swimming pool. The cleaner said, but it didn't say that in the lease agreement. I know I have to mow the lawn. And there's too many people sticking their nose into things that they don't actually know anything about. I am in agreement. We need to have a Consumer Protection Act. Lease agreements have no business being in there. Just buying something.
Thanks, Sam. I think, yes, we've got consensus on the lease agreement, on the pro forma of what we envisage to be in that pro forma. And you've stipulated it very quite well of what we want to see. Basic standard stuff that are very important. And often, the bone of contention is about those issues that are not included in the lease agreement. And if the lease agreement was done in such a way that is very clear. What is the size of the house? What is the rent that you are paying? What are your obligations? What are my obligations? That's it. That's all you need in a lease agreement. And that is what we are calling for. And I see the reason why some want the SMS and email and lease because of this protracted long list of the lease that often is always available there. And people want to read that in any case. And, you know, I personally feel and believe that if we have a very short term vision, that's what we are proposing of the lease agreement, all problems will be solved. The thing is, it must be in writing so that it has legal standing. That is the bottom line. But one point that you are making that we must take into consideration is the strengthening of the tribunals, you know, to make sure that their decisions are, you know, web violence standing and being implemented. And again, the strengthening of the appeals in open senses, so that we avoid it going to court. You know, sometimes you cannot avoid the unavoidable. You can go to court based on the strength of, you know, so one's pocket or the severity of the case. But with all means, we must try to do mediation in terms of the tribunal and the appeals court. But I think that is a point that we will take into consideration. And open the estate agent, yes, you are in the middle. Because if you've got the landlord on the other side, then you've got the tenants on the other side, and you are the middleman. And there is always an exception about you because of issues of the deposit, issues of the pre-inspection, issues of maintenance. Who does that? You know, which compounds the problem as well. So I'm happy that you, as an estate agent, you came here and you put the point across from a middleman perspective, and I think that's what we need to do. But importantly, talk about the issues of rents, because I think at the end of the day, it's money making scheme. And that's what we are trying to do, because of those who bought, have, can go to court and contract things. The have not cannot do anything. So we are trying to balance here between the have and the have not. You know, so that at least, they always say there's no such thing as an equal of like. There will always be those that are more equal than others. The fact of life. So at least here we are trying to balance between the have and the have not, so that there is redress at the end of the day, and mediation and conflict mediation in the best possible way that we can. And I think what you've given us here is food for thought. But we are in agreement that the written list must be there, and we need to strengthen the role of the tribunal. Thanks, Chair.
Yes, I think I just want to say one thing, that is that these public hearings, we've not just brought everybody here at great expense just to give you a chance to come to Parliament. We bring you here because as Parliament, we want your input. And we will take all this that's come out of these meetings today. We've done a huge amount of work on this bill already. But we will take all these suggestions, we will go and have a look at them again. We will again consult with our legal team before, you know, this actually is put into law. So I want to say to you and to assure you that we really do appreciate the input that you, everybody has made today, because that will assist us, because as I said here before today, it is our intention that this should be good legislation, and that it should help the people on the ground, regardless of who they are. They must easily be able to access it and use it, you know, to their advantage. Thank you.
No, I think I said everything that I want to say. I would just like to see a legislation that is understandable and very, very clear. I know I've been quite long-winded in some of the things that are written in there. And I understand that. I don't think it could be that precise. But it would be nice. And there can be no mistaking intentions.
So, not that, but we'll consider many issues. It does not mean that you have presented everything that you have presented, you are going to take it to traffic, you are going to consider, but what you are going to each and everyone that we have listened to him or her today, we are going to respond and inform you why we have not taken your suggestion on this matter, and then we have accepted this because of 1, 2, 3. We will do that. Wait and see.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Irshan Higgins. I am an attorney by profession, and I've been knocking around attorneys here, but that's not the capacity in which I'm sitting here today. I'm sitting in the capacity as a member of the Western Cape Housing Tribunal. I'm serving my second term now. Okay, thank you, madam. Yeah, so I'm sitting in a capacity as a member of the tribunal. It's been there for the past 5 years. I've still got about 3 men. My term is ending in 18 months time, so I'm hoping we can push hard now to actually get things right before I leave. And I think I do sit here with the benefit of a bit of experience in terms of the rental housing tribunal, and I'm glad that, you know, some of the members have alluded to the fact that mediation is called for at the best of times, because the litigation process in our country is a bit flawed, and the poor person or the marginalized person, they always suffer, because people with the deeper pockets, they're the ones that actually they win. Whether they win in terms of the result or not is material, but the person who has been marginalized, they're the loser, because ultimately, whether it's time or whether it's money, time taken off work, they're the loser. So the point is, it has to have a mechanism to mediation to resolve issues. And I'm glad to hear that there are members of the public, like we've had before, that also as a third party to resolve disputes. However, the reason why we're here today is that we, in principle, we do not have a problem with the amendment in itself. This is one issue, and I do believe that you have copies of this document that you submitted, and I'm not going to read the document because I'm sure everybody has read the document. I'm just going to highlight some of the issues. That is the section 17, which deals with the appeals. Now, we are concerned with the issue of the appeals process. As you know from the Act, there is a 90-day period within which a matter must be resolved. Now, if one looks at the steps, you'll see that due to a lack of resources and, you know, human resources and sometimes other types of resources like vehicles, etc., sometimes, in many cases, you find that they are over, the administrative stock are over the 90-day period before it appears before us as a tribunal. So I think that already is a problem. What this appeal process seeks to do is to exacerbate the problem. Because you have 21 days after the 90 days within which to lodge your appeal, and then the minister has 30 days within which to finalize it. So now you're pushing the mandatory time almost 6 months for somebody to get to the disasters, you know, the day in court. Well, basically, in fact, people don't even want the day in court. People want the problem solved. People have a problem, and they want problem solved. Whether it means day in court, or whether it means a mediation, or whether it means one of the administrative staff can just give them information. And when they have the information, they can be satisfied that I'm not being prejudiced here. Or alternatively, when a mediation comes about, that, you know, they can walk out of here with a win-win situation, because obviously you never have a situation where people have a win-lose situation in the mediation, because the parties actually own the process. When obviously they get to the tribunal, now the danger is there that, you know, there's a win-lose situation. Now the problem that the tribunal faces is that, yes, there's a review process, and I think it's very sound that there's a review process, because if there is anything procedurally wrong, was entirely insufficient, then of course there must be a higher process, you know, whether, and that process unfortunately is to the High Court, which obviously is expensive to do. So, in our experience, most people, in fact, we get very, very little reviews there in Western Cape Housing Tribunal, if one is at the stats. I mean, I can think of about 3 in the last year, which is actually a very, very low number of reviews. Because when one adjudicates a matter like that, you have 2 issues to consider. One is the procedural issues, things like, you know, do have jurisdiction, and various other procedural issues. And then you have the substantive issues. Now the substantive issues revolve around the facts, and obviously application of the law to the facts. Now, there's not very many laws attached to the rental housing tribunal. In terms of what they need to consider. If you are a judge of the High Court, there's a myriad of laws that you need to know. before something about the rental housing tribunal, and I think my job is quite easy because we need to look at, we need to know the Rental Housing Act very well. We need to know obviously the amendments, all the ancillary documents attached to the Rental Housing Act. Then we need to know a little bit about the Consumer Protection Act. We need to know a little bit about the Conventional Penalties Act. So we have very many laws to actually consider and apply to the facts. So, in essence, it's very difficult actually to get to a wrong decision on the substantive issues. However, there is instances where you can get maybe the procedure wrong. And then, of course, there's a court to look at and say, excuse me, you haven't applied this particular procedure. But when one looks at the substantive issue, now we're talking about appeals, then you're going to find that every person who feels that the ego has been touched or tainted, or every person that feels that they've been wronged, and every person who gets a judgment against them feels that they have been wronged, will obviously take advantage of the fact that there is an appeal process, which means that now it's another bite of the cherry. Now, when they go for a hearing, a normal hearing, obviously the first bite of it is to become reasonable and resolve the issue through mediation. If that doesn't happen, it gets referred to the tribunal. Then we find many instances tenants come there and they hope that, despite the fact that they've damaged the property, despite the fact that, you know, they've done everything that is wrong, they're hoping that they will still get the deposit back, you know, because the tribunal might just see it their way. Alternatively, there's a technicality, there wasn't a proper ingoing inspection, a written one, or there wasn't a proper outgoing inspection, a written one. And when there's a flaw on either of those two things, there's a good chance that the tribunal will say, well, excuse me, Mr. Landlord, you never complied with the ingoing inspection, you never complied with the outgoing inspection, therefore, you can't now say that there was damage, and therefore the person has to get the deposit back. So, in that instance, we find many occasions where natural justice will dictate and determine or demand that person should actually pay for the damage through losing the deposit or a portion of the deposit, because the act is makes certain provisions, and then natural justice can't prevail because the legislation saying this must prevail, otherwise you must get the deposit back. So a lot of them come there and they try their luck, and you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it don't work. And now, by adding the another cut of the cherry, by now having an appeal process, it will inevitably happen that I'm going to appeal in any case. So now you can imagine the administrative burden that is now placed on the state to actually process all those appeals. And now, of course, there are great intentions of doing this within our 21 days and our 30 days, but we'll end up with such a backlog that it will be impossible to actually get through all those things. And then those days don't mean anything anymore. Similar to the 90-day good intention that the legislature had initially, and now it moved to 120 days and up to 200 days. So one must seriously take into account those things. Then the other issue, or the big issue, is that let's look at the poor people here. Poor people, this type of legislation is designed for poor people. Unfortunately, that is not the case, because these things need to be marketed to poor people. Need to be marketed in the townships, need to be marketed in the informal settlements. Unfortunately, that is not the case. Maybe because due to a lack of resources, alternatively, a lack of political will, whichever the case may be. But the reality is, poor people know about it now and again, but the majority of people appearing at the rental housing tribunal come from affluent areas. We've had issues with people coming from Lintano, people coming from Clifton, and the issue is about a pool pump I do not believe that was the intention of the legislature to look at pool pumps. I do not believe that when somebody sends the rental housing tribunal to lodge a case, through our process, we eventually get to us, and the woman's problem was that her tenant was supposed to strike her while she's in Canada with her dogs every day. And when she omitted to do this, I mean, suddenly, this is the type of message we give. Well, sure, what do you do? This is a problem. You know, now she's a bad demon and she must get out, etc., etc. So I'm saying, I do not believe that the legislature intended frivolous matters to appear in front of this particular tribunal. I believe if you do have a frivolous matter, please take it to the magistrate court, please take it to the high court, and pay your lawyers to deal with it. But do not waste state resources on things that was actually intended for marginalized people. And this is the problem that we have at the rental housing tribunal. And I do believe that the intention of the legislature is noble to actually put an appeals body there, but it will exacerbate the problem for the poor people. The other problem is, whilst people are saying, or rather the legislature is proposing, that they will have this appeals committee and will be, it won't be so burdensome to poor people, but it will, because you have an army of lawyers walking in with a landlord at this housing tribunal, this council, a senior counsel sometimes, there's junior counsel, there's an attorney, and there's an article clerk. Four attorneys representing the interests of one person at a service that is supposed to be free. So what will happen? Of course, whichever way that decision is gonna go at that tribunal, it will be appealed. And the appeal will be the stick. And somebody has to have to go through that particular appeal. Why they need to look at all the factual evidence, why they need to look at the legislation attached to the factual evidence. So there's a myriad of problems, and any of the problems that could potentially come as a result of this appeal body that now should, you know, is proposed to come into operation. So I do believe that it will definitely prejudice poor people, it will definitely prejudice the people that this legislation has been intended to benefit. Now, one can look at the small claims court. The small claims court is a jurisdiction ran to 12,000 rand. It's situated at the magistrate's court. There's also a right to review that particular judgment of the small claims court commissioner, but there is no right to appeal. And I do believe that it works, because the amount is so small, it doesn't make sense to actually take a matter like that on appeal and waste state resources, having to allocate the charge for it, having to, you know, organize a court. I mean, we've got little enough courts, you know, for the big matters. So now we can actually have a process that makes provision for appeals. So which means the state will have now need to make resources available to support that appeals committee. So there's already a cost attached to that. And obviously the cost comes from the taxpayer. Then the second leg is that appeal committee will not be immune to an appeal or to a review, which means whichever way that appeals committee is in the rule or the finding of it can go further, which means it prejudices the poor person all the time. Then something that we notice is that if one looks at the actual amendment 4, the MEC must finalize the appeal within 30 days of referral and may refer the decision back to the tribunal or confirm, set aside, or amend the decision. What's being called upon here is for that MEC to perform a judicial function. It definitely deviates from the executive function of an MEC. So I do not understand on what basis an MEC will confirm, set aside, or amend the decision, because surely that is a judicial function. And even though the MEC gets advice, you know, by whoever's going to advise, whether it's an attorney, an advocate, whether it's internal or external, they will make the recommendation, but ultimately the judicial function, the judgment, will be the MEC's call at the end of the day. So that's on the side. So, on the issue of the teeth that I've heard of, I mean, we've heard about the teeth that the rental housing tribunal must get. We believe that, you know, that the current situation is untenable. Of course, you have many situations where rental doesn't get paid, or there's a breach of a contract, and the inevitable result of that is that the landlord wants the tenant evicted. Please get out of my place. Now, the Constitution is very clear. Any eviction must be made via a court. and that I view now is not very good. But there's a way around it. The way around is to say that the tribunal can actually make a judgment in respect of an eviction. However, it must be vetted by a court. It must be confirmed by a court, which means it doesn't conflict in with the Constitution. The Constitution says only a court can evict. So which means even though the rental tribunal has the time and resources to look at why somebody should be evicted, so which means they can obviously give their reasoning and investigation there, because 90 days of investigation is a long time of investigation. Now, a court does not have 90 days to do it. A judge gets a pile of documents, or magistrate gets a pile of documents or files, he goes through it. Chances are he's just flipping through those documents, through those affidavits, and at the end of the day makes a decision to evict or not. I'm saying the tribunal has 90 days to investigate an investigation. Then the tribunal must be given an opportunity to make a judgment, and that judgment, in order to keep with the provision of the Constitution, must be vetted by a court of law, whether it's a high court or whether it is the, well, obviously it will be a magistrate court, because the tribunal has the same powers as a magistrate court. So that is on that issue. The two examples I want to give, that why an appeal process is not a very good idea, is number one. Let's assume somebody wants their deposit back. The landlord refuses to give the deposit. The person loses a complaint, and the person says, look, this is urgent, I need to move into my new place, but I need my deposit. If I don't have my deposit, I can't move in. Now, the call gets made by one of the staff members of the tribunal who come inside the committee room, who said, please, this is urgent, we need to hear this matter, because otherwise this person can't move into the premises because the landlord doesn't want to give back the deposit. Now let's assume we do this urgent matter and we hear the matter, and then the landlord says, well, excuse me, I want to take this matter on appeal, I've got 21 days to do it. And thereafter, the MC will have 30 days within which to make his decision. There's 2 months almost gone. So what happens to that person that must now move into a new place? It's not going to happen. That's the one example. The second example, the tribunal has the power to do what you call a mandament from spoli, which is a spoliation order. It's a restorative, it's a restoration order. So they say the tenant has home on that, and the landlord has locked him out. Now what do? They have two choices. One, they can go to the matchbook, but that's expensive. You're going to need an attorney like myself, and I will say, please put 10,000 rand deposit down. Now obviously that's not a viable proposition. So what you do, you go to the free service. The free service is the rental housing tribunal. You go get, you get an appointment with a gentleman there or a lady there, and they say, no, we can have this matter heard immediately. Now obviously, they will try to mediate the matter between the landlord and the tenant. If that doesn't happen, they go to the, in front of the tribunal. We can then immediately make an order, excuse me, you need to open a place, and this is an order of the tribunal. Failure to comply, 2 years imprisonment, or fine, not exceeding a certain amount. Now obviously, when people hear there's a possibility of going to jail, they will comply immediately. But if you have 2 months within which to put in an appeal and, you know, wait for the executive to make a judicial decision, then obviously it doesn't make sense anymore for a poor person to go to the rental housing tribunal, which means they must now incur the cost of going to a magistrate's court to get that urgent order. And that, I believe, is an untenable situation. So that is the second example. I'm sorry if I'm laboring this issues, but and in the night like the graveyard shift, and people here would like to go home, so give me 2 more minutes and I will finish. Then the issue of actually I'm not going to read up, I think I've covered most of the other issues. So in a nutshell, and in conclusion, I want to say that it is not a good idea to have a tribunal, an appeals tribunal, sitting above the rental housing tribunal. I do believe that if that situation should happen and the world is ready to have that tribunal, that appeals committee or whichever form it sits, then there must be an amount that must be, there must be a threshold, an amount. In other words, the threshold will maybe be 20,000 or 30,000 rand, whatever the case may be. Anything over and above that threshold must actually be subject or could potentially be subject to an appeal. Anything below that, the status quo should remain, because I think that if poor people come there with a 5,000 rand and 2,000 rand claims, and just to frustrate them, the landlord will say, excuse me, I'm going to take this thing on appeal. But obviously, if the amount is more than 20 or 50,000 rand, the threshold amount, then it's worthwhile doing that, because obviously the parties are then not indigent if that threshold amount is there. So our submission is that we do not agree with the appeals process, but should the appeals process prevail, then there should be a threshold amount. And an appeal will be only allowed should that amount be in excess of the threshold. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's my proposition, so thank you very much.
Thank you. I must say, that was a bonus. I'm still going to take another 5 years. This act allows you, as what I mean, to come into an end now. You're coming to an end.
And I don't have a problem with that, madam.
This act allows you to have these 2 years, because you don't want to lose the institutional members. And I'm not saying I'm agreeing with all the issues that you're raising, but I'm just conveying that message. Members, comments?
Thank you very much. I think you've made some interesting contribution there. And obviously you are honing in on this appeal thing, and I think it ties up with the peak of the tribunal from our previous speaker. You could leave us to discuss that. But can I just ask you, and I know you haven't commented on this, but how does, because you are experiencing this, the Consumer Protection Act have effect, or not, as the case may be, on this legislation that we are dealing with now? We've looked earlier on at the disagreement and the length of it and so on. What is the impact of that on this particular amendment?
Thank you, madam, for
just before you comment. I think the essence is we've been told throughout the body that we should consider other relevant legislation. Now, having what you said and the question that honourable woman is asking is that should we really consider all other legislation when we're dealing with this? Because of you have touched on it in your opening, but do you really think that we should consider all other relevant legislation into this, including the Consumer Protection Act? Because the lady from Just Lady said the problem is we want to put the lead in writing, but Consumer Act says we must give full all things, which means at the end of the day, the written lease agreement goes to 30, 40 pages. Now, does the court doesn't read? That is the question. So, and secondly, on the issue of the appeal, that is a fruitful thought for us, because it just choked us, I guess, on the ground. We need to have a look at it in terms of whether do we get rid of it or do we go with your advice on the threshold and the thing. But that one we will deal with it. Just give us the issue of the impact of all other relevant legislation.
Thank you. Madam Chair, can I proceed?
No, just before that.
Okay.
I just want to reassure you on the issue of the current status of the tribunals, the issue of resources. That issue has been addressed in the Act. So it is addressed. Because the act says, good transition, which is government is given an opportunity to budget. It
because this has to be aligned with the budget side. So it means if this legislation is passed sometime in May, maybe ESOP, maybe, I don't know, maybe they can pass it towards the end of March. I'm just citing an example, because without this legislation, we're not starting afresh. It means it's not going to be implemented immediately. Government is given a 12-month cycle to implement the legislation, which means the issue of resources is addressed. So, I hope it's not an issue, the issue of resources. Then, this 90-day period, we discussed this, had an extensive deliberation. The mandate, maybe you are having a problem. The LEC is an accounting authority. Immediately, once a decision has been taken, according to our understanding, says the portfolio committee, within 7 days, because they are able to receive something from the tribunal, rather than starting a process as a complainant, at a cost, and so on and so forth. If that is not the case, it means that was a problem. That is our understanding. So those timelines have been well calculated. So you are telling us that we must go back to our drawing board and check. We are advising, in fact, what you mean, but not telling. You are advising us. Because that's our understanding. But I think the issue of high courts, this is the competence court, we can look at that, but the issue of evictions dealt in the High Court. So I think the High Court are referred to the issue of evictions. So, but the areas that I thought it is important that I clarify them. Question comes.
Thank you, Madam Jane. Firstly, maybe we can just get to a point of clarity. Evictions are dealt with by the High Court and the Magistrates Court, not just the High Court. Both courts deal with evictions. In fact, it's not often that the High Court deal with evictions because from a cost perspective. Obviously, always in the newspapers, an eviction that the High Court has dealt with, but yeah. So yeah, this is a bit of clarity on that. In respect of the question pertaining to how other legislation impact on the Rental Housing Act, so one big issue is the issue of notice. Now, you can have a fancier's lease with all the pages and, you know, crossing your T's and dotting your I's, but the reality is, and you can have the 12 months or 36 months, however long you wish, but the Consumer Protection Act then comes into play, and you then can give notice, and I speak under Correction Section 21, you got 20 days, Section 21, you have 20 days within which you can notice. So you can have a year lease, but on month 2 you can decide that, no, I don't want to stay here anymore, and here I'm giving 20 days notice in terms of the Consumer Protection Act. And I'm sure the agents have experience with that type of thing. And then you're sitting in a situation where the only remedy for the landlord at that point is that a reasonable penalty must be applied. So the person gets off on 9 months of the lease, but only a reasonable penalty. And obviously we've really doubt and look into, because the Act is actually unclear, the Consumer Protection Act, as to what constitutes a reasonable penalty. So obviously, the judicial body, whether it is Rental Housing Tribunal or a court, must then apply its mind to what constitutes a reasonable penalty. And we find, obviously, in many cases, we need to make a decision quickly, that a month's deposit could potentially be a reasonable penalty, unless we can be convinced otherwise by the landlord, or alternatively by the tenant. So yes, You can have all the leases in the world, but the point is you need to look at other legislation. You need to look at the Conditional Penalties Act in terms of what constitutes a good penalty. You know, did the landlord have the duty to mitigate his loss? Did the tenant have the duty to mitigate loss? So there's various items in other legislations that has a direct impact on leases. So one must consider the other piece of legislation. There's not very many, but those ones that are mentioned is actually the ones that we need to look at, because that comes up again and again at the Rental Housing Tribunal. So yeah, that's just the experience that we have, you know, being on the tribunal. Did I answer that properly, or do you want more elaboration? Okay.
We really appreciate your input. We are going to take consideration. We are going to read the document and then discuss that, take a part on that. Otherwise, we really appreciate the issue of empowerment of the communities is very critical. Very critical. They have adopted to it, but most people do not know the free services that are there for them. But the judgment, discussion too, of the legislation clearly indicates that the minister should go and implement, monitor, and assess the impact of the legislation and come back to us and report. So it means we are going to make sure that the communities are empowered. The kind of society we are having today, sometimes we have challenges. So it means we have to empower our people, because sometimes they don't have that entitlement mind. So those issues are raised by Professor Dumisa here. But if our communities are empowered, I don't think we have much progress. Let's go and implement legislation and see what is going to happen and make sure that communities are empowered. Even the landlords. The landlords, one of them must understand, would know this act is not against them. But it tries to balance the state. So, fortunately, we were representing a human rights lawyer. We were representing the poor. Okay, well, remember, thank you very much. We've come to the end of our long day, and tomorrow we still 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock tomorrow we are coming back to deliver it on the input. Otherwise, we were very active. Then 2 hours after lunch, people will come and they can say the word, but you continue to be bright and brilliant. Steve, I'm also. So to our guests, even those who have left, we really thank you for the time that you have taken to come before the Portfolio Committee. In my introduction, I indicated that we are taking this process very, very seriously, because Parliament has got a critical role to play in ensuring that the legislation that is passed by Parliament, it must make sure that it can protect the people as a whole of the country. And we must make sure that public participation is very important. We know that you are not representing yourself here. You are representing your constituencies, the people whom you are living with them or whom you are serving. So it is important that you are here, and we are appreciating your presence. As I have said, that we will respond. I call on you to come on this human response, because it is there are very few. At least we can afford to respond individually. Otherwise, if we could not afford it, that's going to be a response that is going to be publicized. You can publicize it, but the copies you will receive
the copies of our responses to the issues that we've raised. Thank you so much. Nibuye nangomso.